The beautiful West Bicod, Virginia. Here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour. Welcome to the middle of the week. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, headonradionetwork.com. A listener-supported enterprise of some, we're in our eighth year now. Ninth, if you count the, ninth, if you count the exercise in terrestrial broadcasting where this was all born. But anyway, no matter how you slice it, we've been here for a while, and I'm proud of it, as should you be as well, because you are the ones who have kept this going all this time. And, you know, when it's all said and done, or written, or whatever, or carved in stone, let it be noted that Head On with Bob Kincaid went on the air before Air America and has long outlasted it. And it has outlasted Air America on your determination that it do so. Pretty cool, huh? Yeah, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. If you want to jump in and help, it would certainly be appreciated. We finished April in the hole. We finished March in the hole. I think we finished February in the hole. I can't remember that far back. But the hole's deep, too. So headonradionetwork.com and the PayPal button there. And I'm told by our buddy Randy that it looks like the widget may have stopped working. I don't know if you're out there, John Fox, but the widget is suddenly not keeping up with contributions. And don't know why. So there's that. But no, thank you. Thank you for your contributions that do keep all of this going. It's the only way. Simply put, it is the only way. Because I just don't think we're going to be running across any deep liberal pockets anytime soon. Because I don't run in those circles. And apparently, most progressive broadcasters don't run in those circles because there's not a lot of funding by the deep pockets folks. It's all a matter of standing with one's hand out, hoping to keep it going. And it is an honor beyond expression that y'all have seen fit to keep this going for as long as you have. A program reminder, program note. I'm kind of doing this every night. Remind me if I forget tomorrow. But no show Friday, no show Monday, no show Tuesday, no show Wednesday. 4 days. And that's because I'm on the road. We're going to be taking the human rights struggle against the Appalachian apocalypse of mountaintop removal. We're going to be taking that on the road to Boston, Massachusetts, and Charlotte, North Carolina. So that's where I'll be. I'll be coming home, I guess. I think I get on a plane like 5, 6 o'clock Wednesday night and fly thitherward. On an old barnstormer, twin-engine nightmare, won't get up over 5,000 feet, you know, just high enough to be dangerous, but not high enough to be comfortable. And return from Charlotte to Charleston Wednesday night. So, no show Friday, no show, well, I mean, there'll be shows. What you will probably hear are reruns of this week. Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then regular schedule Thursday, regular scheduled program on Friday. I'm looking forward to this opportunity to speak simply because things on the ground are changing so quickly with regard to mountaintop removal, and they are not changing for the better. They are changing for the worse. People here are getting sicker. There is more poison going into the ground, into the water, into the air. And I get a sense that we are approaching a tipping point here. And those of us who have chosen to be in this struggle and refuse to simply walk away and say, do as you will to us, many of us are redoubling our efforts. The AKE campaign, the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, is on the ground in Washington, D.C., even as I speak. I could have been gone either last week or this week, but health issues precluded that. And so my good friend and colleague, Bo Webb, has soldiered on by himself in large part. He's going to have some help. Vernon Haltom will be going up there, as will Junior Walk. I think they're leaving in the morning, and they'll be doing some work early next week as well. He is working tirelessly to bring awareness of what is going on here in Appalachia to the people who live in the bubble world of Washington, D.C. If you want to learn more about the AKE campaign, the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, you can just go to Stop the AKE, just like it sounds, STOPTHEACHE, StopTheAKE.org. Okay? Do go and educate yourself and learn a little bit more about it. It is vital work. And it is the work that I believe has the strongest chance of any going on out there at present to end mountaintop removal and begin the slow, long process of healing this tortured, tormented region. Now, of course, it is 7 minutes past the hour. It is the middle of the week. It is Wednesday. Downhill to Friday, as it were. Downhill to Thursday for me, because I get on a terrifying airplane on Friday. And so, you know what that means, of course. Yeah. It is, that's right. Prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. Hallelujah. Glory, brethren and sistren, put your hands together. Oh, we're going to pass the plate. Hallelujah, glory, amen. We're going to pass the plate. And as we pass the plate, the minister of music will sing our offertory hymn as he does every week. And if you look in the bottom of the plate, there you'll find a PayPal button. Just press that little PayPal button down in the plate as it comes by. No making change in the collection plate. You know, that's just not done. Push the button, pass it on, would you please? Mr. Minister of Music, brother, would you please lead us in our offertory hymn?
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say,
Pray, Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Present for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ralston on the real line, a brawler, suet, I love you. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, brethren and sistren, hallelujah, glory. Welcome. Quit fooling around out there in the parking lot with the deacons, smoking with the sinners. Come on in through the vestibule. Come on in, eschewing that 20-year-old bowl of nasty, dried-up butter mint sitting there that nobody's touched since Sister Eunice, before she went on to her long home and her great reward, placed them there sometime during the Kennedy administration. Come on down that blood-red carpet, brethren and sistren, and fall on your knees before the altar and lay your hands on the subwoofer. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, brethren and sistren, hallelujah, glory. And I am ultimate imam, uber rabbi, superior pope, animist, badass bishop, Bob Kincaid, and we are here for a midweek evening. Hallelujah, amen, and amen. We are here for an evening of praise and worship and wonderment. Glory. Oh, I can feel the Spirit washing over me. Washing over me. Amen and amen. You know, last night on one of those regular sinner nights here on the program, not prayer meeting Wednesday, but we talked a little bit about Matt Barber. Matt Barber is with the Matt Barber is with Liberty Counsel's Faith and Freedom Radio. They got everything you'd need to make a radio show. They got little old blue haired ladies sending in their Social Security checks, all kinds of stuff. Yes, they do. And what do they do with it, brethren and sistren? I'll tell you what they do. They pour poison into people's ears. Here's a classic example from Matt Barber. What was he going on about last night, brethren and sistren? I can't remember. It's been so far. It's so long ago. But we need to understand, and it was first pointed out many years ago here on the Horn by folks like Peter Godbold. And folks like our dear friend Kate on the Front Range, the monumental power that folks have to change the very structures of the planet. Earthquakes, floods, plagues, hurricanes, frogs, locusts, rivers of blood. Gay people can cause them all. And now we find out that it's gotten all the way down into our social fabric.
But this tyranny of rights, this tyranny of the minority, and we're not talking racial minorities, neutral minorities, we're talking about people who define their identity based upon sexually deviant behaviors and proclivities. So this is a tyranny of sexually deviant rights, and that's, it's by design to displace the enumerated constitutional rights given by our Creator. Based upon the laws of nature and nature's God, these so-called rights violate the laws of nature and nature's God, and yes, violate the express guarantees that we have to religious liberty, freedom of speech, freedom of association granted to us by the United States Constitution.
You heard all that? It violates the laws of nature and nature's God. Now, this is a little bit like romper room here. You know, because I can see everybody who holds their hands up out there. Yeah, I can. You know, me and the doobie. Everybody who knows where that line, the laws of nature and nature and nature's God, that's the phrase, nature and nature's God. Everybody who knows where that phrase comes from, raise your hand, please. Oh, yes, I do. I see Timmy, and Cindy's got her hand up. And Susie's got her hand up. And there's John, and he's got his hand up. David's got his hand up. Oh, mercy, we've got hands up all over the room. Everybody knows, right? Everybody knows that nature and nature's God, that phrase comes from the Declaration of Independence. Everybody knows that. And everybody knows that the Declaration of Independence is not law.
that is a, and I know, this will bother the little right-wingers, but very bright. The Declaration of Independence is not the law of the United States, because the Declaration was written sometime over the course of June 1776, and it was formally and officially published on July the 4th, and probably not seen by many people until July the 5th, 1776. It was a propaganda document. It was a list of grievances. It was something akin to the same sort of thing. It has a history because it's rather akin to Martin Luther nailing his theses. I said theses. Dadgummit. I said theses, nailing his theses to the church door, his objections to the excesses and abuses of the church. Well, the Declaration of Independence is very much the same sort of thing. It is a declaration of objections to the abuses that the colonists then perceived that King George III had engaged in against them. Right? So we understand, although he either does and is willfully lying to his audience, which we can't rule that out, because this is, after all, right-wing radio we're talking about, and they lie to their audiences on a routine and regular basis. We can't rule out that he knows better and is lying, but we also are in a bit of a spot, because we cannot rule out the fact that since this guy is a fundamentalist who believes that the world is actually younger than the written recipe for beer and bread, that this guy is just dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. He is, after all, a fundamentalist Christian, not known for their brightness. So you got to sort it out for yourself. I'm not going to do it for you. You got to sort it out for yourself which one it is. But either way you slice it, either way you slice it, the guy is just wrong. Now, it's been so long since I ran it, let's go back and understand why.
Place the enumerated constitutional rights given by our Creator based upon the laws of nature and nature's God.
There it is. Our constitutional rights given by our Creator based upon nature and nature's God. Now, we understand that nature and nature's God is a phrase from the Declaration of Independence, but let's check. Let's check here, and with the official copy from archives.gov, the official copy of the Constitution of the United States. Because we're looking here for nature and nature's God. Let's see the preamble, and you got to figure it would be in the preamble. Let's see, it starts out in Congress. We the people of the United States, okay, no nature, no nature's God there, in order to form a more perfect union, there's another clause, no God, no nature, no nature's God, establish justice, no God there, ensure domestic tranquility, no invocation of a deity in that, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, no, it's not there either, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Well, if you're ever going to stick nature and nature's God somewhere, that'd be the very place to do it. But it's not there either. Do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Now, I have to tell you that I have been reading for about 44 years. So I like to think I'm pretty good at it. Wait, no, 47 years. Okay, let's be generous, 46. But I've been reading for a long time, and I can generally spot, and I can tell the difference between G-O-D and D-O-G even. Right? And everything I just read to you was the exact preamble to the Constitution of the United States. Now, if we want to, we can go through the rest of the body of the document, but will you trust me when I tell you that it's not there either? Because when you get into the body of the document, you really get into the business end of stuff. This is a framework for a government. It is not a declaration of grievances or beliefs or any of that sort of stuff. And yet, just the same, talking to his none-too-bright audience, here again is Matt Barber creating an elision, I suppose would be the appropriate term, an elision between the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence.
Rights given by our Creator, based upon the laws of nature and nature's God, these so-called rights violate the laws of nature and nature's God, and yes, violate the express guarantees that we have to religious liberty, freedom of speech, freedom of association granted to us by the United States Constitution.
It really does take a special kind of weird little mind to be able to do the mental gymnastics that he just did. Because on the one hand, he's talking about the God granted the rights, and the next thing you know, he's talking about the rights guaranteed under the Constitution of the United States. Well, you know, pick one, Matt. But you can't have both. Because, see, he opens... how then does he feel about, if these rights come from God, how does he feel about little Jimmy Madison? You know, little James Madison was about 5 foot nothing, but he had a big old brain. And he is both mother and father of the Constitution and midwife too as well, I suppose you could say. Because but for James Madison, there would be no Constitution. And James Madison was very, very clear. Don't trust me. Ask Dr. Bill. He'll be starting his own show here in a couple of months, a couple of hours a day, talking about the origins of the Constitution, bringing on experts, that kind of thing. And it is abundantly clear, and it was made clear, for instance, in this past Prism West Virginia American History Chats installment this past Saturday. James Madison did not want a Bill of Rights. He did not think it necessary. All that business about freedom of religion and expression and the press and the freedom to keep and arm bears and jury trials and right to confront your accuser and all the stuff that's contained in what we call the Bill of Rights, James Madison thought to be entirely superfluous. And you can read all about it in the Federalist Papers. Maybe that's the problem here. Mr. Matt Barber is not a big one for that reading thing. Maybe he hasn't been reading for 46 years. Maybe he hasn't been reading for 30. He just tells him what the spirit of Jeebus tells him to say into the microphone. So he's clearly willing to lie. Not surprising, he is a fundamentalist Christian.
The LGBT agenda and constitutional rights cannot exist in harmony, and at Liberty Council, we defend the Constitution.
Yeah, thanks to the folks at rightwingwatch.org for that clip. It must be a living hell over there. I don't know how they do it every day, just watching all of this right-wing fascistic filth. But there you have it. Not only does the LGBT community cause earthquakes and floods and tornadoes and volcanoes and they also cause the Constitution to cease to exist. That's right. A gay person who would like to be able to avail him or herself of the full range of protections that are in fact guaranteed by the amendments to the Constitution, you know, beyond the Bill of Rights, the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, that kind of stuff. They just need to forget about it and shut up and be second-class citizens and be glad that they're second-class and not third, because, you know, we can all fire up the ovens, right? Because, after all, what did he say? Yeah, it's a deviant behavior and proclivity. that gay folks wanting to be able to get married and have the same rights that straight folks have in the United States. Let's see, what is that? That's a tyranny of sexually deviant rights. And it means to replace the enumerated constitutional rights. So, no free speech if there's gay marriage. The right to keep an arm bears. Goodbye. Oh, but wait, these goobers are talking about freedom of religion, which they clearly have in abundance because they're sitting there in very well-funded fashion spewing hate and filth all over the interweb tubes. And then there's that little thing he says at the very beginning where he references, he says, these gay people, they're not a minority, you know, like black people. They're not a neutral minority. Yeah, that one grabbed me too, and it got hold of Sandra as well. Neutral minority? What the hell is that? Is he talking about atoms? What a fucking dumbass. And in a word, he is. But again, you come back around to that philosophical discussion of whether or not he's deliberately being a dumbass or whether he's being a dumbass for the benefit of shifting the views of people who don't know better. And I've got another example of that. I don't know if you're aware of it, but another right-wing liar, and I mean, this guy has gone pro, okay? Another right-wing liar went on Jon Stewart's The Daily Show. He was on there, I guess, Monday night, or Tuesday night, rather. Pimping some book of garbage that he's written called The Jefferson Lies, claiming that, all them secularist atheists are out there claiming Jefferson wasn't saved. Well, there's a moment in there that is pure, unmitigated brilliance. And I think it will be worthwhile to replay it. Because it's an even more broadly brushed example of the way these followers of the Prince of Peace are willing to lie and distort and twist. I have an email here from our good friend Michael, Kid A from the chat room. He says, did I tell you I picked up a copy of the Jefferson Bible Monday night? You know, his abridged version, removing all the miracles and the virgin birth, you know, all the hooey. It was in the atheism section. I'm not sure yet if that is the most correct place for it, but it made me smile and want to give the independent bookstore my money. Good for you, Michael. Good for you. That's a good thing. And Jefferson really did it. He compiled a Bible that got a New Testament at least, that got rid of all of the baloney. You know, dead people getting up and lepers suddenly finding themselves unleprous and loaves and fishes that didn't bioduplicate and basically paired Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, down to his essence. And you know, when you do that, you come up with a very, very fascinating person. Albeit a very fascinating human being, but a very, very fascinating one. Yet he was radically different. And radical like him get done to the zombies because they're suggesting a way of living that challenges the status quo. But that sounds kind of preachy, so we'll take a pass on it. But Matt, Matt Barber has, as is the case with so many of these twisted right-wingers, has a weird fascination with what goes on with other people when the light goes off. And I just tell you, if you go and you watch the video, and other people have far better gaydar than I do, but Matt doesn't exactly present a stirring and inspiring portrait of heterosexuality. You know, you can just kind of see Matt in his trench coat with a hat pulled low over his eyes and the collar of his trench coat turned up against a wind that isn't there as he pops in to the nearest gay bar establishment looking for a little companionship on a Saturday night. Because, you know, they do that kind of thing. You can see it all over at rightwingwatch.org. Rightwingwatch.org. By the way, he has also in the past said that the LGBT community is trying to turn America communist and that they want to put conservatives in prison. No soap on a rope for you, Bubba. And so LGBT rights are inconsistent, according to Mr. Matt Barber, with the Constitution of the United States of America. Even though the Constitution of the United States is sex neutral, it's not necessarily gender neutral, because it's hard for a document to be gender neutral when it assumes that the one of the two genders that make up the human condition is not as equal as the other. Of course, then there's also that whole three-fifths thing out there as well. But they were a neutral minority. Those people that were three-fifths of a human being, right? Yeah, right. But there is, since it is Wednesday, it's worth taking a look at the fact that they are. I mean, here they are. They've got a lovely message to study. They've got a lovely life around which to build their own existence, one that says, love your neighbor as yourself, one that says, love your enemies, one that says that loving your neighbor is literally the second most important thing in the world behind loving God. See, they wouldn't, and Jesus had to put it that way, because if he had just said, love your neighbor as yourself was number one, they wouldn't even wasted time taking it. They would have just stomped him to death right there where he was if he didn't say, love God came first. What's that phrase that Tennessee legislator used? They would have stomped a mud hole in him. But of course, it's not just the Matt Closet that has a fascination with gay people and what he perceives. What rights do they want? What kind of rights? Do they want the right to be all gay out in the streets? Well, no more than heterosexuals do, but oh, I think they do. But it's not just him. There's also John MacArthur, the pastor of Grace Community Church in Sun Valley, California. And John MacArthur, pastor of Grace Community Church in Sun Valley, California, says that God, you know, invisible, omniscient, unprovable, probably not there, God has abandoned America. Goodbye now. See you later. Enjoy the frogs and locusts and rivers of blood. I'm out of here. This is... More fascination, more untoward, inexplicable, except by means of resort to questions of hopeless latency, inexplicable fascination with how a certain segment of the population love each other.
The first thing that happens in a nation when it is abandoned by God is a sexual revolution. Moral, sexual, perversion, pornographic desire describes the general character of the culture. When a society is abandoned by God, it operates out of its own perverse sexual passion without restraint. So the first thing that you look for in a society, if you're trying to discern whether God has abandoned that society, is whether or not that society has gone through a sexual revolution so that illicit sex, adultery, every form of immorality is accepted as normal in that society. God gave them over not just to passions that are explicable because they're men and women, but to inexplicable, degrading passions, for their women exchange the natural function for that which is unnatural. You know a society has been abandoned by God when it celebrates lesbian sex.
They can't resist. I mean, they are absolutely plumb eat up thinking about lesbian sex. And you know, I think, okay, here's how I think it breaks out. And I will gladly accept elaboration or correction from people who know better. The fascination with lesbian sex comes from the straight male portion of the fundamentalist community. Yeah, baby. Yeah, I want to watch. Right? On the other hand, the fascination with male-on-male sex comes from the deeply closeted right wing. The gay right-wing men who are restricted by their lives, their wives, their jobs, the philosophies of the people with whom they work and who pay them very well. They are not allowed to be themselves. So what Pastor MacArthur, Pastor John MacArthur of Grace Community Church, doesn't sound very graceful, does he? Doesn't sound like there's just a whole lot of grace going on out there. I guess he's forgotten the name or something. If people are able to express themselves and their love, their respect, their passion and compassion in the means to do so in which these people's God made them, then that is a sign that God has abandoned the people who aren't the way. Wait a minute, I'm getting lost. So God has abandoned the straight people, but does that mean God likes gay people better? Just asking. But once again, absolutely fascinated. You know, did you hear the delivery still? You know, a society has been abandoned by God when it celebrates lesbian sex. You know, I was just downtown today. I had to go down and put some gas in the vehicle because I'm going to be going down the mountain tomorrow for a doctor's appointment for one of the kids. And after that, I got to go down the mountain on Friday to get on an airplane. It takes a lot of gasoline to do that kind of thing. You know, I went downtown, and right in the middle of the street, there was a big old celebration of lesbian sex going on. It's marching band. And the mounted unit of West Virginia State Police is there on their horses and their helmet stuff, and they just walk down the middle of the street to celebrate, and there are some leather and horses and throw out. Tell you, and you know what? You know what's amazing? We have one of those celebrations of lesbian sex about every 2 hours downtown in the little town where I live. It's it really is. It's just too much. The degree of hate that suffuses these people. Of course, you hate in others what you most recognize in yourself if you are a mentally unwell person. And that probably makes a lot of sense in this case. If these fundies could actually let themselves loose from their hung up, tied down, strapped down, weirded out, strict, if they could be themselves, can you imagine what they would be? There would be celebrations of lesbian sex down small town American streets, and I'm not sure that would be a bad thing. I think if people could be who they were meant to be in this country, we would be a far more normal and happy place. Understanding, of course, as Peter Godbold noted, that normal is only a setting on a dryer. It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, however, and do you know this story? Do you know the story of Richard Grinnell? Now, I am no fan of the Willard Romney campaign. I find Willard to be really weird. And the Mormon Church is no friend to the LGBT community. They poured millions of dollars that could have been used to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, house the homeless, etc., into their Proposition Hate campaign in California. But to some small degree of credit, Willard Romney had, as a member of his staff, an openly gay man. And you heard Matt Barber blithering on about the tyranny of the minority. Well, they're upset about what they're upset that beaten up minorities have any rights at all, because their goal is the tyranny of the majority. There's more of us than there are of you, so you need to sit down and shut up. And so the right wing, of whom Willard Romney is terrified, because they're out there talking more about Mitt Romney's bizarre religion than any of us are, you know, Planet Kolob and all of that stuff. The right wing went to war with the Willard Romney campaign over nothing more than one of his campaign aides. I offer you Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mazuppistan.
Well, this is huge, ladies and gentlemen. This is absolutely huge that a homosexual...
I think he's drinking before he gets behind the microphone. I mean, just saying, did you hear that? Ladies and gentlemen, catch me if I'm wrong.
So this is huge, ladies and gentlemen. This is absolutely huge that...
Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be here all week. Don't forget to sip your waitress. Cheers, ladies and gentlemen.
This guy's slurring more than Limbaugh.
So this is huge, ladies and gentlemen. This is absolutely huge that a homosexual activist in a very prominent place in Mitt Romney's campaign has stepped down. He has resigned, and it's very clear from the Washington Post that he resigned because of pressure that was put on the Romney campaign by the pro-family community. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is...
By the pro-family community. You know, by the bigot community. They've got to have a pretty name for... They're pro-family, you know, because no gay person ever came from a family. Gay people just sit around there stirring their little cauldrons and invoking demons against families because, you know, gay people are hatched. They don't really have mothers and fathers and families that love them, right?
It's a huge win, and it's a huge win for us in regard...
Yeah, it's a huge win for them that they put enough bigoted pressure on the Willard Romney campaign that this man, who actually wanted Willard Romney to win the presidency, stepped down for the good of the campaign so that the bigots would be happy.
Hard to Mitt Romney, because Mitt Romney has been forced to say, look, I overstepped my bounds here. I went outside the parameters here. I went off the reservation with this hire. Pro-family.
Off the reservation? Really? Really, Brian Fisher? Off the reservation? Why don't you just go ahead and say left the plantation while you're at it, buddy? Dumbass Mississippi Stan freak. Off the reservation. You gonna call? Are you gonna refer to Mr. Grinnell as chief too, buddy? These guys are bigots without even trying. He's celebrating bigotry against a gay man, and he works in a little Native American slur while he's at it.
The community has called me back to the table here, called me back inside the borders of the reservation. Now, Mitt Romney's not
twice.
I'm going to admit that. I guarantee you he's not going to admit. But that, ladies, that's exactly what happened. This is a huge win for the pro-family community. And what this means now, and here's what...
Well, enjoy it, because it's the biggest win you're going to have in the pro-family community between now and November, buddy. And probably not November either. Because you're not going to get those... Brian Fisher is not going to get those same people that he's screaming to. This is you, gentlemen. Slurring at. He's not gonna get those people to believe that they can trust a president who thinks he's going to get his own planet when he dies, and whose savior came from planet Kolob with his little brother Satan. Just say it.
Why it's important that we took Romney on this deal. This is why it's important that we did this. You know, Tony Perkins came out and agreed
Norman.
With me this was problematic. Gary Bauer came out and agreed with me this was a problematic hire.
Wait. It's Wednesday. I can feel the shafts of glowing light pouring through the south-facing window panes of our studio here. You can almost hear the choir of angels. Ah! Because the God of irony has just given us a sign. The God of irony is with us. All hail the God of irony. Why? Let's go back.
Here's why it's important that we took Romney on this deal. This is why it's important that we did this. You know, Tony Perkins came out and agreed with me this was problematic. Gary Bauer came out and agreed.
Tony Perkins came out. Gary Bauer came out. And they went to that celebration of lesbianism, you know, just down the street with the horses and the brass band and the elephants and the majorettes and the cheerleaders and stuff. Thank you, Irony God. Thank you.
This is a problematic hire. You know, we were virtually lone voices in the wilderness, but evidently the energy was building. And here's what's important. This is why it was important that I take Governor Romney on, that we as the pro-family community take Governor Romney on, is I will flat out...
Yeah, because see those five kids that look like Osmonds of Willard Romney's? That's not really his family. They come from Renan Osmond. Really, I mean, you just go to Utah. They're in every grocery store. You can rent five Osmonds, give them a $100 million trust fund. They're not really your family.
Guarantee you he is not going to make this mistake again. There is no way in the world that Mitt Romney isn't going to put a homosexual activist in any position of importance in his campaign.
Shh! Don't tell Brian Fisher, but he probably missed a couple of lesbians along the way. I mean, you reckon? I mean, it's a pretty huge organization at this point in time. I mean, what are they doing? Are they doing psychological testing with electrodes hooked up to genitals and showing movies to make sure that nobody's really, really gay? Brian, I hate to send you back onto the reservation, buddy, but, well, I think there's probably still some gay people in the Romney campaign. Shh. Yeah. Thanks to our buddies at Right Wing Watch. I love these guys. I just do. And one last thing. I mentioned David Barton. David Barton is from a nasty little organization called Wall Builders. He founded Wall Builders. And Wall Builders is an organization that just makes up quotes from famous dead Americans who are no longer able to defend themselves. David Barton has a new book out in which he argues, I guess, that Thomas Jefferson was a fundamentalist Christian who believed that the earth was just slightly younger than the written recipe for bread and beer. And so, kind of a shame on you to John Stewart for even having this freak on his show, because he just gave him a platform. And even if one of Stewart's audience goes, well, you know, he might be right, and falls into the satanic lie that David Barton spews, then John Stewart has done more harm than John Stewart knows. Jesus Christ, there are thousands of hours of right-wing broadcasting for every hour that anybody normal has. And John Stewart just took some of his time and gave it to the liars. So there he is, talking with David Barton. And I guess there is some benefit to this, because we get to find out that David Barton is, in fact, a liar, but it didn't come out on Stewart's program. No, the way it was presented, even though Stewart said, what? Even though he said that, still, it wasn't contradicted. So another one of the lies for which David Barton is famous, but not among the people that matter, not among the people to whom he is lying. Well, you know, a lie gets around the world before the truth gets its shoes on. And it's never been more true than in this case. So let's pick up in the conversation and just see where we are.
To think that, you know, Christians in the Christian community feel under attack right now. They feel like they're having a rough run of it. Would that be a fair statement?
I would say that they feel that way. I would say national polling goes that way.
Right.
And I would say that what I deal with is Christians arrested for simply...
Christians are being arrested for simply being Christians. Yeah, that's where he's going. And do you hear the gooey accent? So, you know, this is the philosophical great-grandson of those same ministers of the gospel who stood in the pulpit in 1855, 1860, 1862, and said, God ordained the institution of slavery. Jesus died on the cross to preserve slavery because the white man is so superior to those sons of Nod. Or some such shit as that. I've got a relative who talked that crap. If there is an afterlife, I'm going to stand at the gates of hell and tease him with ice water off for all eternity. Ooh, you'd like me to just flick some on you, wouldn't you? Sam, you'd like me to just flick some on you, wouldn't you? Ooh, tell me about how Jesus loves slavery some more. Got an ice cube right here, Sam Black.
Doing what I would call free speech.
Right. Now, where are they arrested?
Well, for example, Pastor Mark Hall in Kansas got arrested for standing on a sidewalk and giving out gospel John to anybody who would take it. We had two Gideons arrested in Florida for giving out Bibles for anybody to take it.
Right.
At a 67-year-old
guy. What was the arrest
the charge?
For? Yeah.
They didn't have a parade permit.
What was it, a parade?
No. Two guys on the sidewalk.
But it is, I guess, because coming up from it from a non-Christian or religious perspective.
Of course, you need to understand that everything David Barton has just said is a complete lie. But here comes the real Lulu.
Christianity seems pretty safe in this country and pretty ubiquitous.
In some ways, it is overwhelming. I mean,
times.
You got 83% of the nation that says it's Christian, but when you go to public policy stuff,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we had a kid in St. Louis praying over, 5-year-old kid praying over his own lunch. Teacher picked him up physically out of the chair, yelled at him, "You won't pray over your lunch."
Right.
You got that?
I mean, let's get this nailed down real good. A 5-year-old little boy is in kindergarten, probably, in St. Louis, and he's just minding his own business, praying over his lunch. I don't know if he was trying to resurrect his lunch from the dead, or if he was trying to heal his lunch, or if he was trying to turn, you know, sardines into peanut butter and jelly, or we don't know what this five-year-old's intent was when he was just praying over his lunch. But he was just praying over his lunch, right? Minding his own business.
I would think that that...
Now, what happened? I'm sorry, we got to go back here. What happened?
That says it's Christian, but when you go to public policy stuff, mm-hmm. I mean, we had a kid in St. Louis praying over, five-year-old kid praying over his own lunch. Teacher picked him up physically out of the chair, yelled at him, you won't pray over your lunch.
Right. Wow. Picked him up physically out of the chair and yelled at him, you will not pray over your lunch. Man, this is a brutal Christian persecuting nation we're in, isn't it?
That's
but that, I would think that that teacher would get in a lot of trouble.
No. Actually, that's why
a
we...
A teacher picked a five-year-old up by the scruff of their neck,
no.
Turned him like this and went,
and
you will not pray over your lunch, plopped him back down,
no.
And the kid got
took
in trouble.
Took it to the principal, and the principal did the same thing the teacher did.
But
curiously enough, the principal's last name was Pilate. Just saying.
They're idiots then.
Exactly.
Those people are...
But where did they get that? Where did they get that sense? And where do we find... I mean, we just had a hearing in Senate on this, went through 67 single-spaced pages of all of these...
You ever notice that they're fascinated with page amounts and single-spacing versus double-spacing? So, you know, there he is perpetuating the Fat Tony Scalia meme. You don't expect us to read all these pages with all these words on it, do you? That's a lot of words. 67 single-spaced pages, my God!
Singular incidents like this. There's a hostility, and the hostility is being fueled by people who say this is what Jefferson wanted. This is what he was all about.
That's the connection?
That's the connection.
On the flip side of it.
Yeah, okay. So, you know the story, right? The student was named Raymond Raines. Okay? And Raymond Raines, this is an old story. The story goes back pre-2009. That's what this liar David Barton does. It just happened day before yesterday. Makes it sound like it, doesn't it? More than 3 years ago. To give you a little hint. Ann Coulter was among the first to write about it. Flush Flimball, the oxymoron's brother David, was among the first to write about it. Or fictionalize about it. And, see, Raymond Raines wasn't five. Raymond Raines was 10. Lie number one. Now, yeah, you heard the audio just like I did, right? He didn't say, I think the kid was five, maybe six. I don't know. I could be mistaken. No, he said the child was 5 years old, and the teacher picked him bodily up out of his chair and said, you will not pray over your food. It's just crazy, isn't it? His mama said he was given detention. His mama said. You know, baby is always right in the eyes of mama. Mama said he was put in detention because he was praying over his lunch. But there was a problem. Lawyers from the Rutherford Institute, who are out there to protect our religious liberties, our freedom of expression, you know, as long as they're the right kind of express, right? Well, they jumped in. Boy, they were going to defend little Raymond Raines because he got yanked up and shaken in out of his chair and was told to pray over his lunch. There's only one problem. Didn't happen. And by that, I don't mean it didn't happen like they said. I mean it didn't happen. You know, kind of the way there were dinosaurs on Earth. And that did happen, but no human beings, especially not Adam and Eve, never rode a dinosaur to church on Sundays. That never happened. This is that kind of never happened. Kenneth Brostrin was the lawyer for the school system. He said, I can tell you he was not reprimanded for praying. You think it makes sense that the teachers would look around the cafeteria and target the one student who was praying quietly at his seat? No. You know what Raymond Raines was doing? Raymond Raines was brawling. He was fighting. And he was sent to the principal's office for fighting. But you see, these Christians are a bunch of godforsaken, filthy liars. So because they've got to fuel this equally filthy lie that they're being persecuted, well, they have to completely fabricate a story. Completely make up a story. Because they don't have any stories of spikes being rammed up the fundaments of Christians who were then rolled in pitch and lit on fire outside of Nero's apartments or in the Vatican field before there was ever a Vatican. It's not happening. But Raymond Raines was 5 years old, not 10. He wasn't fighting, he was praying. Broad is the way. Broad is the way. And they are liars. And if anyone wants a country that is incompatible with the rights supposedly enshrined in the Constitution, and that's another story altogether, as Jim noted in a previous email, he says, I've been reading a lot as well. George III and Parliament actually wanted the colonies to help pay for expenses of the French and Indian War. They were happy to have the redcoats when needed, but did not wish to help out paying for it. Many of the taxes found so onerous by the colonists were passed as early as 1733, but not enforced. Jim notes the rest is history, as you know quite well. And that's true. Everything Jim says there is absolutely true. Our glorious revolutionary past is not quite as it would seem. If you've been following the Prison West Virginia American Hitchhat series, you know that much of what has been passed down to us as history is actually hagiography. The Constitution of the United States was enshrined, passed, what have you, as a means of protecting the monetary and property rights of the 1%. It just was. That's not a criticism. That's not a damnation, a condemnation. It is just an observation of fact. And James Madison, who apparently was the devil, if you listen to these right-wingers, Bill of Rights? Who needs one? He turns out to have been wrong, not right. But this is the nature, this is the lying nature of a great deal of what passes for Christianity in this country. Not all of them. There are very, very good people. I know some of them. I respect some of them greatly. And I even work with them. And when you talk to them, you can tell that they have actually spent a considerable amount of time studying the life. Not so much the gory death, but the life and the transformative ideas of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer who was an itinerant rabbi. You can tell that love thy neighbor goes all the way to their core. You can tell that messages about the hungry, clothing the naked, housing the homeless, visiting the sick and imprisoned, that goes all the way down to their toenails. But no one out there is actively speaking up and saying that Brian Fisher is not. A follower of Christ. Christianity is hard to evade, isn't it, Clayton? Bro was right. I understand why you write that. Kevin writing in says, Bob, these nonsensical rabbit trails the right wing continues to talk about are only a cover to distract us from the real issues of the economy, continued loss of freedoms, ignorance of the Constitution, and ignorance can be used in several different ways here. Ignorance can be willful or by just not knowing. But in the case of these so-called leaders of the right-wing Christian community, they want to make us a theocracy and to just willfully ignore all the parts of the Constitution that they don't agree with, especially the part that says equal rights for all people. Very sad that the sheeple of the Christian community continue to follow these so-called leaders without questioning their motives and the rightness or wrongness of what these morons are preaching in the first place. Indeed, Kevin. Kevin also noting that if the kid was praying at all, he was probably praying that the pink slime he was about to eat would be changed into real meat. Oh, today's special, says Kevin, rent 4 Osmonds, get the 5th Osmond free. Yeah. So there we are. This evening's prayer meeting Wednesday, Philibobster, is now at an end. And here endeth the lesson, as the saying goes. So we'll take a little break and come back. Thank you very kindly for the contributions that have come in. You know, we try to raise about $100, $100 every night, and we are on our way. We are not there yet, but thank you. Thank you very kindly for being part of what we need to get from day to day to day. You know how to reach the program. I've got a couple of lines open yet. And you can jump right in at 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or that's toll-free. Or if you want to carry your own long-distance charges, or maybe you've got a plan that doesn't even count long-distance anymore, you can always reach the program at 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
To of the day to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun. Day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one. Stop there and think the old man.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. 15 minutes past the hour, we do enter the second hour of the broadcast this evening. Under the... And the visual is so profound. Under the email heading of white people, this email in from, and that's all it said, this email in from Sandra. New Jersey mom accused of taking daughter in tanning booth. Tanning booth mom calls arrest for taking daughter 5 a misunderstanding. It was a sunburn, dad says. Oy vey. How bad is it? Extra. This comes from the meaningless entertainment propaganda emailer PR person that sends me stuff. Extra. Snooki reacts to tanaholic mom. You are not supposed to take kids there. You know, when Snooki is telling... Wow. Then for immediate release, musician shares wife's story during Skin Cancer Awareness Month. Yeah, this woman took her 5-year-old daughter into a tanning bed and roasted her real good. I tan, she doesn't, said Patricia Krenzel, 44. I'm in the booth, she's in the room, that's all there is to it. Do you remember the episode of Seinfeld where Kramer was buttering himself? Yeah, this woman makes him look pale. And that was, of course, using makeup. Just say it. Let's keep it going. Let's get it going. Hey, welcome to the program. Anybody? Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy prayer meeting Wednesday,
brother. Well, hallelujah, glory, Brother Albert. Are you in the spirit?
Glory, glory. Oh, I'm in tongues. I don't know what you do, I love you.
Yes.
What did I tell you about Sister Snooki? I told you Sister Snooki had some sense. It's a David Ambrose, folks. You got to watch it with David Ambrose. She's not that stupid, see? She's just a 21-year-old in a friggin' house with a bunch of booze. What do you think? Come on now, let's be honest with ourselves.
Yeah, see, I did that back before reality television was born. Back then, they called it a fraternity house.
Exactly. A whole franchise of films and everything. It's still here with us. If I may, I'd like to mail a prayer letter, you know, to the universe, if I may.
Oh, do please.
Okay.
It's good. Now make sure you do not leave the God of Irony out, because the God of Irony.
This is directly to her. Dear mighty goddess of irony, thank you for your signs of guidance for those with love and compassion for their fellow life forms living with eyes of conscience. Please continue to deliver your most magnificent justice on those filled with hate and fear as the examples for those that know you and seek to evolve. Thank you. Fear is the mind killer.
And all God's and all the goddess of irony's children said, amen.
When you see these things and when you see them, just we have
Tony Perkins things. Came out. Gary Bauer came out.
Oh yeah.
Yoo-hoo.
I mean, now I got to get a divorce. I got to start drinking. I can't ever see my children again because I can't be pro-family.
No.
How can I be pro-family now?
Yeah, you're not a bigot. You can't be pro-family. I mean, that one sermon was replayed on James Dobson's radio program, Albert, and we all remember that James Dobson is the man who said that a pro-family father will take a little boy into the shower and shake his winky at him to keep him from catching the gay.
Aren't we supposed to be beating our kids?
Until they cry real tears. I guess that's what you do after you've shaken your winky at him.
Okay, that sounds like good advice. I mean, raising kids is so complicated. How's anyone to even cope or get by? I mean, of course, that's how we do with it. Let's beat them and wiggle our winkies at them. Yeah, let's do that. Let's take them into the shower and into the bathhouse and into the tanning booth, and you know, because you know that lady's got to be something, right? had to look good for church.
Have you seen the picture?
You know?
I mean, I realize that talking about photos on the radio is dancing about architecture, but have you seen the picture of Mrs. Krentzel? Have you seen the picture? Jesus Christ, I've got an old baseball glove that's lighter than her. And you just know, she walks in at the tanning booth and everybody there says, oh, you are just glowing. Oh, get in the booth some more.
Well, her skin probably worked up so she could sit in there for an hour.
I mean, she looks like, well, okay, did you ever, I don't know, were they gone by the time you were traveling with your family, Albert? Because I know you mentioned that y'all traveled around some. Do you remember Stuckey's?
Yeah.
Little roadside stores, you know, blue, and you could get a pecan log roll, and they sold cherry juice and stuff like that.
Firecrackers.
And those little Adams magic novelties. Yeah, and lots of candies, lots of things made with pecans, because it was all started by a pecan farmer. And they would also always have these sort of carved tiki heads out of whole coconut husks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She looks like one of those. Now everybody below the age of, say, 32 has gone, what is he talking about? Well, it's from a bygone era of an America just beginning its fascination with its open highway system. There used to be these little, and all the roadside stands had them. You know, down south where I was more familiar, there were places like Early's and Stands, and they had those hanging coconuts and the best smoked sausage you ever ate in your life, and great coffee. My parents loved the coffee. Good coffee was a big thing back then, before Starbucks.
Now they're called 7-Eleven, or Special K, or Circle K, you know.
Yeah, but they're not nearly as fun.
No,
I think one of the old Stuckey's on I-65 is now a place that sells rather shocking marital aids, but it's got a billboard right by it saying, "You are going to hell if you go in there."
Oh God! You know, well, I guess it's just that pile of dirt we often sweep under the rug is just kind of emerging back out under that rug.
And that's the thing. You can't sweep it under the rug, Brother Albert. You got to get your little dustpan out and sweep it up and throw it in the trash where it belongs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or even better, just throw it in your yard. It's dirt. That's where it belongs. Out there. Let it reconstitute with something living. You know what I mean? Why not?
Yeah.
Because that's what these people need. They have no connection to these things. How dare you? How dare you go after and they're just gay. Don't you ever get your mind past the fact that, oh, what they do in the bedroom? Don't worry about what they're... Why are you thinking about what they're doing in the bedroom? Stop that. Okay? You know, like, didn't you ever ask yourself, what is that? Why do people, like... do they like girls as, like, I like, you know, do they like boys like I like girls, or do they like boys like I like, you know what I mean? Don't you ever look at yourself and see, you know, how you approach things? And isn't there a magnetism? I mean, if you're straight, I happen to be straight, so there's a magnetism to women, for me. Don't you think that same...
Yeah, but see, I think it's I'm of two minds on this. Like I said, on the one hand, you've got those males in the fundamentalist community, Albert, and they feel that same magnetism you and I do. On the other hand, there is a probably. I would submit to you that within the fundamentalist community, there is probably a proportion of homosexuality that's actually higher than it is in the ordinary population at large. Because they say in the general population it's about 10%. I would guess it probably runs upwards of 25%. Because it's a place to go if you're desperately trying to repress your own sexuality. Because they'll tell you that it's all dirty. Okay? And for that side of it, it's like... Well, it's magnetism, isn't it? I mean, there are those, you know, you take those two poles of the magnet and you can feel them pushing each other apart.
Yep.
But then you flip the magnet over and they go bink and they're stuck together. Yep. And you've got these repressed, profoundly gay people who are tormenting themselves, trying to push away at their sexuality when they keep going bink, and every time they go bink, that magnetism they're feeling is toward another guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they run off and they read Romans, or they flagellate themselves. Or, you know, they put the trench coat on, turn the collar up, pull the ball cap down low, and go into the Amanda B. Reckoned With Memorial Tavern. And just look longingly at the drag queens.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's really pathetic when you get right down to it.
It is.
And if they weren't such hypocrites, you know, again, I reiterate, it ain't about the sexuality, it's about the hypocrisy. You know, come on out. Go to the downtown lesbian celebration and have a good time.
Yeah.
Because there's no dress rehearsal. This is not dress rehearsal. This is it.
Yeah.
Even if there's an afterlife with the pearly gates and all those things that those ancient people who lived in a dirty, filthy desert thought would be a really nice way to not have, you know. The pearly gates and streets of gold, that's all from a people who lived in filth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they just, mm-hmm. when they died, they just wanted to go somewhere that was clean and comfortable. You know, about 72 degrees, you know, the most you'd possibly need is a light jacket. You know, not a bunch of heavy robes, and there's no sandstorms and dust storms. So that was the paradise they envisioned. So let's assume that that's real for a minute, Brother Albert. When these repressed people go there, do they think they're not going to be gay anymore? Is gay something that only happens in the flesh and not in the spirit? Because I can tell you, I've never sensed any. There's never been anything physical about a person that has said, probably gay. To the extent that I even do it, but it is a matter of personality. It's a way of living and dealing with the world. And that, you know, that goes back to what Peter Godbold used to say. You know, the right wing is so obsessed with the sexual aspect of it, they have no interest whatsoever in the spiritual side of it. And that's the one thing they are, these right wingers want to deny, that there is a spirituality to it. That is, it is a function of our common, shared human heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And when they deny the spirituality of it, what they're essentially saying is that gay people aren't really human.
They go on their witch hunts.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and essentially their enemy is within. You know, there's no way you can have that much hatred
and be okay.
Something you're hiding. Yeah, I mean, it's just not healthy to carry that kind of hatred. I mean, yeah, we get all upset and ragged on, and, you know, I can't stand Republicans. I can't stand them. But when I'm in their presence, I don't hate them. If anything, I'm trying to show them a better way. If anything, I mean, you know, and I'll try to do what I can in terms of a conversation, but I don't hate them. You know, and I don't let them run roughshod. There ain't no doubt about that.
No, I'll tell you this much. Agnes gets frustrated with me. Because, for instance, we were in the parking lot of the grocery store yesterday. And, you know, this is
I can
not,
see it.
Yeah. We're in the parking lot of the grocery store yesterday. We're walking to our car. So there we are, vulnerable little pedestrians. Walking, you know, walking around, walking through Lake Kroger, you know, the low point where the rain collects.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how it is with angled parking. You know, there's only one way to go into an angled parking space.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, here comes this giant-ass SUV, driven by some woman. And I say that only to differentiate that it wasn't some guy. Just driven by some woman. She's coming the wrong way down the parking alley. And you know what she does, right, Albert? You've seen it. It drives you crazy, too. I'll bet you. I got a dollar that says you've seen this, and you go, oh, idiots! She's coming the wrong way down the parking lane and whips her giant Canyonero the wrong way into the parking slot, and then proceeds to engage in the automotive acrobatics trying to get squared up in the slot. when all she had to do was just loop through, you know, jump to, come back, and bang, she could have gone, and it wouldn't have taken any more time than the gyrations did. And I'm, and as the car's coming along, I look at Agnes and I go, looky here, honey, we got a show enough idiot. And she goes, will you just stop? And then the car turned in and I saw the Friends of Coal sticker. And I said, I win, lo, yea, verily, I am vindicated. Atne, ute, aitbre, all praise the god of irony.
Exactly. Thank you, goddess.
And Agnes just looks at me and goes, I hate it when that happens. I hate it when that happens.
Well,
but yeah, it's like an email that I got from the Isaac earlier today. You know, it's too much video to do on the. It's these fundamentalist Christians who are like, you know, late 1970s, early 1980s slam dancing, while some DJ MCs in tongues. And the only note that Isaac attached to the note was, or the only thing he attached to the note was, be advised, these people walk among us and they get to vote.
Yes. And they don't forget.
and they're gonna go and they're gonna vote pro family.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want no lesbian parades.
You know.
I know.
What a sad way to experience life. How depraved they live. They always talk about themselves being persecuted, you know, and they make up stories about it. And they're the ones that persecute. They're the ones that hate. You know, and if they get hate, it's because of how they are. You know, it's because of how they approach people and how they talk to people. They'll protest funerals and they'll, you know, constantly try to write laws that make, you know, oh, the end of your pregnancy, you're pregnant. You know, and just creating all just magic, hocus pocus, nonstop, and just they're just terrible. It's just they wonder. You wonder why people are kind of at least tiny. Oh, don't put your flag on that monument. Keep the Ten Commandments off. You know, well, you don't love the Ten Commandments. Well, what about Sharia law? Muslims. I mean, ridiculous.
I'm sorry, just the way you did that.
Yeah.
I mean, did you hear about the conference they had the other day? Texas Betsy sent me a note about this. Pam Geller, who is one of those uber right-wing, never saw a Muslim, she didn't want to kill, pro-Israel types. She's got some sort of sick, twisted radio show. So she has this conference at some Hyatt, and I don't remember what town it was in. Oh, no, she went to Michigan to have it. It was in Detroit. And it was going to be a conference about the rights of women in Islam. Why do I always go into that voice when I did? Yeah, because
it's your preacher voice.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, you need a good preacher voice.
So it was going to be about the rights of women in Islam. So some Islamic women showed up to go to the conference. They were, of course, denied entry. And they asked the security guard, where's the Women in Islam conference? And the security guard says, the what? The Women in Islam conference. It's been advertised for weeks. The Women in Islam, women's rights in Islam. Oh, you mean the anti-Islam conference? That's what they're calling it now. It's up there on the second floor, but you can't go, honey. Now, who knew that there was a redneck security guard in Detroit. I think it boils down to the fact that I don't do a good Michigan accent.
Well, they're there.
But no. Yeah. Oh, you mean the anti-Islam conference? Second floor. Mm-hmm. You can't go.
Ugh. Ugh.
Because, you know, they went with their headgear on.
Of course. You know. Jesus.
Right, because to be fair, their God won't like them if they don't wear their headgear. I mean, all religion is nuts. I mean, we understand that, right?
Yeah.
But you know what? if you sleep better at night because of your headgear and you think God likes you a little better in this incredibly confusing universe, wear the headgear. It's fine by me. No problem. Just don't ask me to wear it.
Mm-hmm.
Although if I came from a culture that had wandered in the desert for 10,000 years, I might have a rather cultural, emotional attachment to it too, because that stuff comes in handy in blowing sand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why my culture wore kilts, because every now and then, as a guy, it's nice to get that cool breeze off the Hebrides up amongst the undercarriage. It's pleasant. And yet the wool is heavy enough to keep it from freezing.
I know. It's just they're oblivious to everything. They don't ever ask why this is this way. They just use it as a way to say, you're different than me. It's, you know, sneetches with stars on their bellies all over again.
And I guess they never... You know, I remember when I was in first grade, I think I had to wait 6 weeks before I got to check out the sneetches and other stories from the school library, because everybody got it before me.
Mm.
And I really wanted to, and I sat there. There was a story in there called The Pale Green Pants, just about a pair of pale green pants that ran around by night. And I thought at the tender age of six that that was the funniest thing that I had ever, ever, ever read. And I went back and reread it when my children were little, and it's still funny, by the way, but it's part of the sneetches and other stories. And I was thrilled. You know, I was a pretty good reader by the age of six. And I'm sitting there reading it, and I'm reading it to Mom, reading it to Dad, and they were just laughing their heads off. And you know, the sneetches is a valuable tale to, and I guess maybe they just didn't, they never made it onto the, school was out by the time the sneetches got around to them. Is that it?
I sure hope not, because that's a fundamental, law. It's like a law of human nature. And it's a, you know, it's like a parable of, you know, of, oh, yeah, we're not all that different, aren't we? You know, it's the proper way to look at your fellow human being. You know, you look at that story, and, you know, I tell my kids all the time, the best mistakes are, you know, other people's mistakes, or daddy's mistakes, or, you know, whatever. If I make a mistake, you better learn from it, because I'm paying for it. You better eat it. It's free. Eat it. It's another person's mistake. And listen to the story. What does the story tell you? And, you know, my kids get it. They understand. They asked me today, what's prejudice? Because we were talking about...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they said, what's prejudice? And I had to, you know, because now they're at that point now that they're, you know, they hear all these words that they hear all the time, and they're like, and I tell them, you know, like, you know, Daddy will talk to you like you're, you know, a big person. If you don't understand a word, you know...
You have to ask.
Ask, yeah. And that, you know, so they're like, what's prejudice? They don't know what prejudice is, because we don't teach them prejudice.
Because they haven't been raised around any.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I mean, I tell them it's there, and I tell them it exists, and, why would anyone look like that?
And, you know, even uncomfortable doing that, Brother Albert, because even when doing that, you feel like you are the serpent introducing the fruit into the garden.
Yes. Yeah, you feel like, you know, you got to be careful with how you don't want to spill this oil in the wrong way. You don't want to think, you know, you want them to know that this is not the right way. And they, you know, you have to say it very carefully, you know, on how you word it. I don't know. I don't think it's all that difficult. I mean, why do you live with hate in your heart? That's living with fear in your heart. Why are you afraid? What are you afraid of? What is it that you're afraid of? And I constantly, anytime I confront, and I do constantly confront right-wingers, what are you afraid of? What is it that you live in fear? Do you like, are you happy living in fear? Are you really happy living in fear of everyone that's a different color than you? Of everyone that's maybe he likes you? You ever think that's a compliment? If some guy has the cojones to come up to you and say, hey, I think you're attractive, and I don't care if you're gay, but I just think you're attractive, and I just wanted you to know. Yeah, maybe you are, you know, he's fishing. Don't go, say, hey, well, thank you very much. I'm not gay, but I definitely appreciate that because, you know, women don't even tell you that. They don't ever say, oh, you know, they keep it all hush, 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 hush. And it's nice to be told, hey, you're good looking. Thank you. Take it as a compliment. They're not going to rape you. They're not going to jump on you. And I mean, come on. What do you think? I mean, goodness gracious. You should.
No, but the clamp down, tamp down, strap down, hung up, yeah, they're kind of open. Maybe they will. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
You know, a little duct tape, a little tennis ball, a little, you know.
Dirty.
I mean, and the next thing you know, the youth minister is found in a bed in Montgomery wearing three rubber wetsuits with a pair of dildos in places that we won't discuss.
Oh, God. I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous. It's just utterly shameful. And they should be, yeah, you should be persecuted for being so goddamn hateful. Stop being so hateful. You think that, I mean, read your goddamn Bible for 10 minutes and then come back to us. You know, give me
Yeah, or don't. There's a lot of scary stuff in there.
Well, yeah, true. Have David Attenborough read it to you.
Maybe Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and stop there. Because the next thing you know, you're getting into hallucinations about flying horses and apocalypses and blood, and their eyeballs rotted in their socket, and yay, their tongues became as big as mushmelons, and hallelujah, and the Lord was coming, and no.
Yeah, read the red words.
Read the red words.
Yeah, just read those. And not only that, you should maybe, you know, Nick, before you start going all crazy about Thomas Jefferson being an evangelical Christian, maybe you should, like, first recognize the fact that, you know, according to Revelations and blah, 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 at the very back end of the book there, the most recent edition, it's like he committed the most grievous sin of all, hasn't he? Because he went in there to write his own. This is what I think the Bible is. He wrote his own Bible. So what do you mean, evangelical? How can an evangelical? What are you talking about? He just committed, you know, according to the book. That's your book? Okay, well, this is his Bible. Why don't you read his Bible and see what his Bible says? You know, it's everything taken out of your Bible, but without all that other...
And see, there's all of that stuff out there, and dadgummit, you know, that's why, you know, the John Stewart letting him on the show was a little bit bothersome. Because he did not have time to peel this guy like the grape in the way that he deserved. Do you see what I'm saying? He didn't have time to eviscerate him. He didn't have time to prove him to be a fraud. No, they just, you know, you got a new book out, so you get to go on John Stewart's show, and you get to babble your babble, and then, you know, John Stewart throws you a couple of softballs, and you tell a story about a 5-year-old kid who was 10 years old, who got lifted out of his chair for praying over his food, who was actually fighting. And, oh, okay, well, that's fine. Well, you know, best of luck. Go and sin no more.
No.
I mean, it's like going back to the tanning bed business. We just got an email in from Robert in Australia, Albert. And he said, as if we don't get enough sunlight in Australia, some people here still found the need to use tanning beds.
Mm.
Oh, you know, real Darwin Award winners.
What would Chopper Reed say about that? Anyway.
Not anymore, though, Robert says.
Yeah.
At least here in New South Wales, tanning beds will be completely banned by 2014. Why? Because they cause skin cancer, and we already have enough sufferers. It's expected that other states in Australia will follow. Well, let this story get a little bit of legs, and I really appreciate Robert sending it along, because this is, you know, this is a case of a government made up of its popularly elected people acting in its own societal best interests, in which there is a value in not having your citizens burn up of skin cancer. But let Brian Fisher of the American Family Association, or Matt Barber, or any of those other goobers, James, you see, Jesus was gave us the freedom when he was God to have tanning beds and to make a choice for tanning beds, and Jesus wants us to have a choice, don't you know?
And
Rand and Ron Paul will be out there on the Hustle. Do you see what they've done in Australia? They've taken away their rights to tanning beds. Next thing you know, they'll be taking away their rights to have guns, and then the Austrian people won't be free no more. Because, you know, that's really how I define freedom, Albert, is that, you know, the freedom to bake myself in a tanning bed and get really, really deep, level 5 melanoma.
Yeah. I judge my freedom by, you know, the unregulated markets. Yeah, unregulated markets make me feel free.
Yeah. You know what? I'm so glad that none of that awful communist Obamacare stuff has kicked in, Albert. Because I went to the doctor today and I found out how free I am. Man, am I free!
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Scott Brown's daughter's free?
No. She's a lot less free than I am. Because if Scott Brown's daughter, you know, he hates that Obamacare. But if Scott Brown's daughter gets sick and goes to the hospital, she's really, really not free. She's dependent on the nanny state because she goes to the doctor and they don't send her a bill.
Oh, no. Persecution.
Yeah. She is a slave in a totalitarian regime. I, on the other hand, Brother Albert, I mean, free. Yeah, right. Here's how free I am. So this was the follow-up from my little hospitalization scare of last week. And, you know, the nice thing is, you know, I don't have cancer. I don't have a rotten pancreas that's going to have to come out where I have to take insulin shots every day for the rest of my life and, you know, grow hair in strange places that have never grown hair before. God damn, I didn't even know there was a follicle on my toenail. You know, that kind of stuff. I got a rotten gallbladder. And I'm not trying to just talk about this, but this is how free I am. I got a rotten gallbladder. And I had a lovely conversation with the surgeon, whom I really respect, who was straight up with me. I said, you know, I'm a nervous wreck about this, Doc. He said, I've never had surgery. I'd be scared out of my wits at the thought of having done to me what I do to people. He said, so you're okay, which was nice. Maybe he was lying, but he sure came across as truthful, and it put me at ease. Okay? And we talked about realities and things that yada, yada, yada. And so I was okay, you know, I'll get the surgery somewhere down the road. But this comes around to how free I am. I'm so free, I'm going to have to save up really big time until I can do it. Because I went into the emergency room on Sunday night, was transferred to a room in the wee hours of Monday morning, and was discharged at about 10:30 on Tuesday afternoon. Okay? And I was free the whole time. And I, you know how I know how free I was? Because I'm so free, I get to pay $8,130 for that.
Oh, freedom!
Yeah, boy. And I'm also so free that that if I want to have this rotten little Republican removed from my abdomen, that I get to pay another $5,000. So I am one free mofo, okay? I am free. I don't have none of that communist Obamacare weighing me down and keeping me up in the middle of the night, making me wonder about what would happen if I didn't have to pay $14,000 to get the Republican taken out of my my abdomen. I'm free. I am sleeping the sleep of the just.
Yeah,
I'm free.
Yep, that's right. You're as free as the people that get vaporized by our freedom bombs.
Yeah, I mean, consider the lilies. I am all kinds of free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, free! Don't you love freedom? Don't you love being an island unto yourself? You know. You don't.
Yeah, I ain't a part of no Maine. I am. I'm a rock. I'm an island. And a rock feels no pain, and an island never cries, right?
Yeah, you're going galt.
Yeah, if only I had some galt gold coins to trade for my cholecystectomy. Maybe, no. I don't know, you know, because if you read Atlas Shrugged, the way it's all supposed to work, Brother Albert, is that John Galt has some gold coins, but he wants some cabinets in his cabin somewhere in a remote holler in Colorado. So you make cabinets, so you go to John Galt's house, and you make John Galt some cabinets, and John Galt gives you one of his little John Galt gold coins. And then you go to the doctor and give him the gold coin to take out your rotten gallbladder. And I'm trying to figure out how this works. I mean, do I go to the hospital and offer to do progressive talk radio for them only for 3 hours? I mean, how's this work? We'll talk for surgery. By God, I'm free.
It's a heartbreaking thing. I know you guys are kind of, you're talking about online voting and kind of foo-fooing it. But wouldn't it be nice if, you take your social security number, you have a bank, and we as people get to set the goals of what we want our elected leaders to then do. And, it would be interesting. I just want to see what it would be. Do your duty, go vote on this little poll that just kind of explains issues, has links, take a little poll. Where do you want your money going? That would be nice. That's what I mean when I talk like that, is I want to have a little bit more say. Because I know where I would vote. I know I want universal health. I don't want Obamacare. I want universal health care. I don't want, I don't want anybody to get any kind of fine, or I don't want you worrying about, I want you getting better. I don't want you worrying about money. I don't want you worrying about how free you are. I want to be free enough to say, the money that I pay in taxes, I want to go to this, not to this. And I think that would set an agenda. I mean, shouldn't we be setting an agenda here? I don't know. I mean, it's just like, they get into the Washington and they forget. We don't have
any lobbying. Just a bit of a caution, Albert.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know how that will work out, have you ever, and I don't know if you do, I don't, but every now and then I'll get up in the morning and I'll see an entire internet full of outrage over how some reality show ended and how the most worthy person got booted off in favor of somebody with two left feet. Okay?
Yeah,
because of the will of the majority. If you want to know how, and I'm sorry, I'm being a nattering nabob of negativity and I know it, but if you want to know how that which you're describing would work out, is once you factor in Citizens United and everything, the wrong person would always be kept on the island, and the nice, useful person who's been great for the team would be sent out to swim with the sharks. Because there's a reason that these right wingers, for instance, are constantly saying, and this is their new tactic. Chris Krispy Kreme Christie in New Jersey is notorious for this. Well, I think homosexual rights should be put. Yeah, I think your homosexual rights need to be put on the ballot for everybody to vote for. Okay? And if you don't like it, F you. See, I didn't turn him into a redneck. Aren't you proud?
Yeah.
And because he knows that bigotry is the default position in this country. And it is the default position in this country because this country is controlled by people like Brian Fisher from the American Family Association and Matt Barber and James Dobson. All they've got to do is whip the faithful into a frenzy and boom, everything goes sideways. That lesson is still with me from Ken Burns' Prohibition documentary about, you don't need a majority. You just need enough to make, all you need is enough of a percentage to sway the outcome.
True. But don't we have more people? I mean, when we have...
I don't know. I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that question, Albert. Sometimes I think so, sometimes I think not.
I know. I mean, I try to venture out my bubble as much as I can, and I try to go into neutral places, and I do discussions, and I often find the overwhelming responses from the most intelligent individuals, they're always liberals. I mean, we're like firemen out here. We're the ones that are sitting here, anytime any of these anarcho-randians are coming out, look at Reddit. Yeah, they have these moments, but the people that go in there and just eviscerate them, that's one of my favorite words, they eviscerate these people. It's like it's damage control. It's going in there and saying, no, you are completely incorrect, and this is why. Line by line by line by line. And yeah, I know there's an attention span. I know everyone's caring about Snooki and Snooki this and that. It's just because they like to hate. That's just because they like to, gossip and feel better about themselves because, what's her name? All the whatever. The mother of the octuplets and this.
Oh, the Duggard woman?
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, no, the Octomom. I'm sorry. She's a different one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but, you know, and you can go to all kinds of, you know, and I would even venture, you know, a place like the Huffington Post. You know, they try to, you know, it's definitely got the left wing, you know, dominant there. But, you know, those right wingers come in, and my goodness gracious, it's like the liberals just eat them up like piranhas and eating up goldfish. They don't stand a chance. And if anything, that you sit there and you look at their information, or you look at the things they produce on the internet, they don't even know the internet. The internet, I think, is mostly liberal. It's a liberal place. It's a place where free ideas, just by its definition, it causes free thinking. Even if you're looking at reptilians and aliens and, oh, this and this and that, you know, it's just the fact that your brain's out there and doing the exercise. Like that lady, she pulls into the parking space, she just needed to practice, Brother Bob. That's what she needs in her life. The goddess of irony directed her to the, you are an idiot, you're gonna need some practice on how to do some thinking. And it's just, you know, I'm going to take all exercise as good exercise. I mean, I'm going to sit here and take any kind of discussion as an opportunity to not only maybe change this person's mind, to not only give them a completely unmovable object of fact and reason, love and compassion. I mean, the things that I stand for are the things that they shall not pass. I mean, I'm not trying to be corny, but they shall not pass. I don't let it happen. You know, and I'm not the only one. There's people out there just like that. And you go look at it. It's all over the place. So, you know, the internet is a kind of place where, yeah, apathy can grow, and yeah, you know, you can waste your time, and yeah, you're doing porn, and da-da-da-da-da. But every now and then, the whole...
Now, wasting time and porn are not in the same category, Albert. I mean, let's be clear.
but at the same time, the whole idea of the internet, the whole fact, it's just there's more knowledge there than you could even shake a stick at. These people drowned. They drowned. They are not the majority.
And they're just sort of bobbing along all bloaty and drowny in the internet sea, is that it? I mean, and they just bump up against something every now and then, and they holler, states' rights! Protect the unborn!
Yeah, there's an earthquake, it cracks open, one of them slithers out from the limestone that building on their head and the sediment, and they come out and, the fish eat it like it's like they're coral. And they're just in a feeding frenzy of coral polyps. You know what I mean? I mean, they're out there. Sure, they're out there. But there's more of us. There's more of us in this nation. There's more of us on this planet. You know, it's time that we start standing up and kind of making avenues for us to let us know what, you know, how things should go. Look at, you know, online polls. Yeah, they can be fake. Sure, they can be fake. Yeah, that happens. But this house can't, but hey, my PayPal account could get hacked. All these things can happen. But they can also be, you know, minimized and mitigated. You know, voter fraud is another one. That's it's like a boogeyman. It doesn't exist. You know, I mean, yeah, I understand, you know, how many people have gotten their accounts swiped. You know, if you're silly with these things, you know, I do my taxes online. I buy this online. I help you online. I do this online. I do everything online. The online is the next frontier in terms of, you know, in terms of our civilization. It's going to be secure. It's pretty dang secure in a lot of ways, and I know it's also pretty vulnerable in a lot of ways. But, you know, come on. I mean, I've never lost a single penny from anything, and maybe that's just because I'm lucky, man, because I'm one of them coral polyps floating around, and they didn't get me. But it doesn't, come on, you know? I mean, think of the damage it could do. It's like saying, you know, the same thing when they talk about legalizing cannabis. Oh, what about all the people smoking pot and driving? Where are the accidents? Where are the cops crying about that they can't... Oh,
well, yeah, that goes back to an old Robin Williams gag about getting pulled over stoned. And, yeah, you're kind of driving a little slow there, Mr. Williams. What, are you on the way to the dentist?
Yeah. yeah, I am, and I got a bad eye ache, and I'm just trying to take it easy. All right, you have a good day. That's it. I got pink eye, I can't see. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like... You're going to pass the sobriety test. You're not going to get into ag. It doesn't happen. All the studies, they show that these things, you know, so don't let these fears and, you know, irrational ways kind of hedge us and keep us in this pen. You know, it's time for us to open the pen. We can go back into the pen. We still have the pen. The pen, we're not selling the pen. But we're expanding it. We're going to, you know, we're going to drop our manure drippings and we're going to let grass grow. We're going to do, we have to. This is progress. I mean, how else are we going to get people's voices to be heard? A lot of people don't
know. How else are we going to build the bullet train that runs from Greenville, that runs from Columbia, South Carolina to Montgomery, Alabama?
Yeah. What, you know, I mean, that's the other thing. People don't know things. You know, like what percentage of the budget is NASA? Oh, it's a sixth of a penny. Do you think maybe we should give them a penny? Just a full penny? I'd give NASA a full penny. Look at what they're doing with a sixth of a penny. Give them six times more. Goodness gracious. We need to be out there. That's the ocean. That's the next ocean. I'm trying not to say next frontier, but goddammit.
It's almost impossible, isn't it?
It is.
I want to give these heroic, frontier pressing up from their own bootstraps, rising tide lifts all boat Republican right-wing types, something to dream about and somewhere to go, preferably an all-carbon dioxide atmosphere that they can then change to an oxygen atmosphere. You know?
They're not going to do that without plants. Oh, no. They cut all the trees. And they're poisoning the algae. They're killing it. You know, and this is the thing that... I don't know. You know, I guess I look at life. We're in this for the long haul. You know, I don't want to leave my kids. You know, everyone knows this. You know, about everyone here. Nobody wants to leave their kids and their grandkids. They want their grandchildren and grand. You know, they want to talk about 2,000 years ago, how dumb we were. That's what I want. I want people to still be here and to say, man, they were stupid. Thank goodness they kind of started coming.
Yeah, see,
around.
I'm engaged in a little bit of a vanity or a hubris. For some reason or other, Albert, back when I started taking this pill for my elevated blood sugar, which is working very nicely, I might add, and is on the $5 formulary at most drugstores, so that makes me very happy.
Excellent.
I guess I'm less free because there's a $5 formulary, but I'll try to get over it. But I just, you know, because you're supposed to keep a record of what your blood sugar is day to day, to check it twice a day, yada, yada, yada. Well, I decided I would not only do that, but I would make it worthwhile, so I would keep those numbers in conjunction with just making a few remarks every day in a journal. And I got a couple of weeks into the journaling, and I thought, you know, who am I writing this for? And then I realized I knew all along. I'm not writing it for my kids to read later. I'm not even necessarily writing it for my grandkids, some born, some unborn, to read later. I love, you know, you're talking about all that wonderful stuff that's out there on the internet. I simply adore to get on the internet and read ancient stuff. Dr. John and I shared an exchange a few weeks back in which I recommended to him the poetry of Nezahualcoyotl, the philosopher king of Texcoco.
Just real quick, if I may, imagine trying to get your hands on that before the internet.
Yeah, right. That ain't happening.
No.
But, you know, it's there. And, you know, Marcus Aurelius, and reading him. And,
mm-hmm.
And even though he was a conservative patrician, 1% preserving piece of shit, the letters between Cicero and Atticus, you know, those were preserved, and somehow or another, they came down through the centuries to us, and I don't read them because I want to know what his politics were. I read them because they contain little nuggets of what his world was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized, not that I'm Cicero or Atticus or Nezahualcoyotl or Marcus Aurelius, you know, because my journaling is more like broke my effing finger today, you know, that kind of stuff. Won't go to doctor because we do not have health care.
Because I'm free.
I'm just crazy enough to think that somehow or another, maybe somebody from it's very difficult to transmit knowledge from one generation to the next, especially when it's in hard copy. But I would love, you know, I'm never going to be a mummy or anything, and I sure don't want anybody staring at me in a museum.
But Brother Bob, listen, this conversation will be heard in 10,000 years.
I hope so. I sincerely hope so.
Yeah, it's there forever.
It's there for as long as the server guilt bill gets paid.
Well, true, but, you know, we've got copies.
And I sit up nights worrying about these things. But that's why I did it because it matters. I want them to, I mean, we've got some ledgers from a store that a family member ran about 110 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just bare bones stuff. It's just like the old clay tablets from ancient Sumer. It's, you know, bag of rice, bag of beans. And how much things were back in the day.
You know, back in the day when we paid in a silver dime like Ron Paul wants us to.
And you know, you see credit accounts and you see payments being made. And I, the first time I saw those as a kid, I just sat there for hours reading every blessed line. And I still go back to them and I look at them because those are reflections of real living human beings that sweated it out every blessed day and had a hell of a lot harder time than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? They were more free, too, because they didn't have any of that damned health insurance to worry about. And if they got the cancer, they took the cancer and they just went and died like Jesus wanted them to. Didn't run around trying to get cured.
Yeah, they followed the call.
So, that you know, I admit, I'm just a weirdo, Albert.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Weirdos,
it beats the dickens out of being normal.
True. Well, exactly. Weirdos have a way of surviving. So.
And you know, and I get to console myself with that line from Forrest Gump. You know, at least I ain't led no humdrum life. I mean, I'm not scaling the Himalayas in Nepal. I'm not sifting among the ruins of Ashurbanipal. By the way, do you know, and I have to share this with you because you're going to love it so much, do you know the name of the language that Joseph Smith claimed he translated by looking through his hat with seeing stones at golden tablets? Do you know what the golden tablets were written in?
Oh, no, I don't know. I'm sitting down.
Yeah, strap in. The strap-in advice is probably better for Dr. John, but... Yes, the golden plates were written in Reformed Egyptian.
I'm a believer. Oh, did they? Were they?
Yeah, they did, really, Reformed Egyptian. Even though there's no such language. And the plates that were written in Reformed Egyptian told the story of about how Jesus came flying across the ocean after he'd done been murdered. And stopped and paid a visit to the Nephites or the Lamanites or the Morons or, you know, whoever the hell it was.
Wasn't it Iroquois? The Aztecs or somebody.
Yeah, right. It's a Reformed Egyptian.
Reformed Egyptian.
I guess that only came after unrepentant Egyptian.
King James edition. King James Egyptian. There we go.
I recommend Mark Twain on Mormons to anybody who wants to. I mean, Mark Twain despised a lot of people.
Yes.
But he saved the real brilliance of his pen for Mormons.
Yeah, he's the Matt Stone and Trey Parker.
Can't touch him.
No, I mean he's yeah. Those are ours, you know what I mean? They're the ones that are, you know, of course not. They speak crazy back then, you know how it is.
Yep.
Today we're that blend of hillbilly and ghetto slang and grunts and stuff now, you know what I mean?
Grunts. Oh, Jesus.
You know?
Yeah, I know. Albert, this has been a magnificent conversation. Thank you, brother.
Always, brother.
You all here. Yeah, you make my evening. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Grunts and stuff. Hey, welcome to the program. Okie dokie. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you?
Hey, what's happening, Jim?
Well, first, a belated anniversary greeting to you and your spouse.
Well, thank you very kindly. We had a quiet but enjoyable day. I think we're really going to tear the roof off the sucker next year when it's 20. I looked at her across the luncheon table and said, you know, honey, we're old enough to vote and we're almost old enough to drink. God help us when we've been married 21 years.
Well, I certainly hope you get to enjoy that particular cake.
I do, too.
You know, you were referring to the Sumerians and Ashurbanipal and Sennacherib, and I don't know, it came to mind this excerpt from The Exorcist, which I thought was incredible. I've always thought it was incredible. When the archaeologist was thinking about Nineveh, and he wrote, or William Peter Blatty wrote, "And here once stood 100-gated Nineveh, feared nest of the Assyrian hordes, now sprawled in the red dust of its own predilection." And from that particular passage, I began to think about other things that will be sprawled in the red dust of their own predilection.
Well, that takes me immediately. Was it Shelley who wrote Ozymandias?
He was.
"Look upon me, ye mighty, and despair."
It was he, referring to the statues of Memnon.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But, you know, going back to the first part of your program, you know, history is written by the people who win it. History is written by the victors, not the vanquished. And, of course, as you well know, victory has 1,000 fathers. Defeat is an orphan.
Precisely.
So, you know, there it is, and there you have it. And as far as the particular gay thing is concerned, I would recommend highly to your audience that they see the film Latter Days.
Yeah, you sent an email about that, and I hadn't gotten around to it.
I mentioned it on this program before.
Yeah. Is that easily obtainable?
I don't know. I have a copy of it, but, I mean, you know, I saw it on Logo. And basically it's the story of a young Mormon missionary who is sent to Los Angeles with his co-Mormons, and he realizes his own sexuality, and, of course, he's sent back to his home in Pocatello, wherever that is, I guess.
Idaho.
Yeah, and so from that point forward, he's disowned and excommunicated from his
Shunned.
In church, and then he attempts to, because of the disgrace, he attempts suicide, and because of that, he is sent to a sexual aversion therapy center where they put him in tubs of ice and stuff like that and make him scrub floors with toothbrushes. And he finally, with scarred wrist, escapes back to a friend he had met in Los Angeles, and he is accepted among more tolerant people. I would just leave it at that. And, you know...
You know, there's got to be a special place in hell reserved for the people who torture a human being that way. Don't you think?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how it's structured. Dante gives us a good idea, but nonetheless, you know, going as far as the gay thing is concerned, you don't know what it's really like to be gay unless you are gay.
Precisely.
And, you know, you and Albert are among great minorities because, or great majorities, excuse me, because you're both straight, white men.
Shining with privilege, absolutely, and I acknowledge that.
Yeah, you are, but you will never know what it's like to fight the prejudice and to have to deal with the situations that arise from day to day when people begin to wonder, well, why aren't you married or why don't you have children or this, that, and the other, and, you know, why do you do this and why do you do that?
And they concoct strange phrases like, well, he's a confirmed bachelor.
No, it's gone beyond that. That's the Southern thing, and basically even that's going away now. People are becoming more and more, well, I would think with the rise of people like Fred Phelps and the stuff you've been talking about with Romney and the Republicans, they're becoming extremely...
Well, they boasted about destroying a man's livelihood.
Excuse me?
There was that Brian Fisher creep boasting about destroying a man's livelihood. Now, these Republicans have been all about job creation, right? The job creators, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, this guy was a high-ranking member of the Romney team. He was being paid for his work, and they destroyed his ability to make a living.
Let me tell you something, Bob. I know exactly what it's like to be prosecuted and persecuted because PTA doesn't approve the way you do your thing, okay? Because I've seen it happen to a lot of people. whose jobs were taken away, whose security clearances were revoked, and who were the subject of witch hunts. I don't know what it's like to have to avoid and to just wonder when you go to work every day if someone hasn't, you know, found out something or this, that, and the other. I know from personal experience. You understand me?
I do understand you.
And you'll never be able to understand unless you are gay.
No, and the thing is, what other people...
Brother Albert.
Yeah, what other people can do is to try to exhibit a little bit of common human, without regard to sexuality, common human compassion.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, if people were of a correct mindset, we wouldn't even have to use the word compassion. It would basically default to live and let live.
Yes. It's not that hard. Most of us at some time or another, most of our parents told us that an essential part of being a member of any civilized society is learning how to mind one's own business.
Well, I would think so. I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, minding my own business and taking care of my own affairs is a 24/7 operation, and I don't have time to worry about who sleeps with whom and who does what and what Snooki does or what some crazy idiot woman does in a tanning bed. You know, that's just the most ridiculous thing in the world I've ever seen. And by the way, when I saw her picture on Ibis this morning, I will guarantee you one thing, she certainly couldn't pass the paper bag test to get into the Harlem Club to the Cotton Club in Harlem in the 30s. That's for damn sure.
No, and you know, that's another one of those anachronisms. You know, white people out there trying to be less white while celebrating their whiteness, of course.
Well, I don't understand it either because, I mean, of course, I had my days in the sun and had a tan and stuff like that because it makes you look more vibrant and healthy and this, that, and the other. But you get to the point where you get into a tanning booth and expose yourself to various classes of melanoma and all types of horrible things. And, you know, it's just nuts. I mean, I don't know if it's an urban legend or not, but I know of one woman who was or heard of and saw on TV, I mean, for take what it's worth, who was going to be a bridesmaid in some type of wedding, and she went to 5 different tanning beds in one day attempting to get the right color. It killed her.
Yeah,
killed her.
You know, look at John Boner.
I mean, you know, it killed her. I mean, she literally, I think, died before the wedding was over. But, I mean, you know, it's just amazing the attentions that people are paying to certain problems. And I wish they would simply live and let live and let other people be themselves and, you know.
And see, it's maddening. It makes your mind feel like it's broken or something when you run across the Brian Fishers and the Matt Barbers and the James Dobsons of the world, and you understand, you know, it's not. Listen, if these people talk like this inside their churches or whatever, they have an absolute and uncontrovertible, uncontestable right to do so. But they have taken it to the point now where it is not enough for them to believe this way. It is not enough for them, Jim, to live in a world that is consumed by hatred. They wish to enforce that upon the rest of us and make their twisted vision of religion our national policy. And that's where people have to speak up.
Well, of course, but, you know, it's like it's been said before. You have the right to say what you want to say, and I have the right to shoot you for saying it.
Well, they certainly believe that.
Well, I definitely think that's the understatement of the
thing. That's the world they want to live in.
I mean, that's, you know,
I mean, that's stand your ground laws.
Well,
I don't know if you saw it earlier today, but in the Trayvon Martin case, I guess some digging around was done in Mr. Zimmerman's MySpace page, and he's got a lot of nasty things to say about people of different ethnicities. And in a very veiled way, his defense counsel put out a statement saying, you better stop that
or we're going to slime Trayvon Martin up one wall and down the other.
Well, I've seen Zimmerman's photograph on TV, and I don't think he would pass Hitler's test to get into the SS, do you?
No. Well, his mother's Peruvian, and his daddy's white folks.
Well, I don't think he quite qualified. You?
No, but apparently he very much white. Yeah. He identified as white.
Well, still don't think he would make it into.
Oh, no. He can't pass the blonde-haired, blue-eyed test. No way.
And who is he to pass judgment on the ethnicity of anybody?
But who is he indeed? But the state of Florida said he had an absolute right to do so, and to do so with a handgun.
And did so. And the result is a dead 17-year-old teenager whose only crime was to be at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, his crime was thinking he was just free enough in Florida to go for a walk to get some Skittles and a can of iced tea.
Yeah, we've talked about all this before, and it's well known. But anyway, not to wax too much on people like Fred Zimmerman and people like that, but I just see a great divide in this country coming. And, you know, I just don't see the emergence of any... How can I say it? Of any degree of a great awakening of tolerance and understanding. I see it going the other way.
And you know, I think there's a natural progression,
you know,
in that, Jim.
And we're more polarized now than we have ever been in my lifetime. I mean, we are more polarized than ever. And there is so much hatred. There is so much...
But that's not a reason not to go forward with further attempts at equality, further attempts to broaden the net of constitutional rights.
Well, in those attempts, I really do, because I've seen so many... I mean, I've seen a lot of progress in my own lifetime, from, for example, with gay people, from Stonewall in 1969. Coming through the sexual revolution of the 70s and 80s. And then I also saw the intolerance and lack of compassion for people with AIDS and things of that nature, and how it was...
And again, who were the principal purveyors of that intolerance and that hatred?
Oh, you had Jerry Falwell, and you had Pat Robertson probably, and God only knows how many other of those people who are just... as far as I'm concerned, anathema. And for my church, they are excommunicate. And, you know...
And that would be the Church of Jim, right?
There was nothing funny about this, because I had friends who died with this.
Yeah.
My own life was changed by it. You know, on this program, I have never decried religion in any form, and you know that. You and I have had problems about that.
I understand it.
However... You know, I've had my share of time in the sun. I've had my share of good times, frantic tumbles, shy goodbyes, and relationships. And I've seen them go by the board. I've seen them lost. And I've not been able to express the way you could, or Albert could, about a loss in your situation.
No.
So I want people to be ever, ever mindful of that. I mean, it's one thing to be sympathetic. It's another thing to be a victim.
It absolutely is.
And I can tell you one thing right now. I served my country.
Yes, you did.
And I've over my bed, I have a wall full of things that are signed from major generals on to senior civil servants to the Department of Defense Secretary. And I did so under a sword of Damocles. But it never prevented me from being ready on call in spite of that difficulty, knowing fully well that those people out there would devour me the way a lame fish would be swimming in a school of barracuda. You know, I call it loss of symmetry. Because when fish swim in a school like that, particularly among barracuda, or even piranhas, loss of symmetry is the death knell. That's when the other fish will seek in and just devour you. And you're lost forever. So I put many lives in my life, Bob. Many lifetimes in my life. And I appreciate the good words and the conversation about tolerance and openness and humanity. But you'll never know what it's like until you walk a mile in my shoes. And I want to underscore that.
And that, for all intents and purposes, is impossible.
It absolutely is. And, you know, for all your good intentions, and I appreciate the good intentions, as I said before, but you will never know what it's like. I mean, I want to ask you a question. What would you do if your own son came to tell you, Dad, I'm gay?
Tell him I love him.
Okay, that's good. A lot of people couldn't do that. But how would it make you feel?
It wouldn't change how I love him.
Well, it would certainly probably change how you feel about his prospects of being happy in life would be.
In that regard, I would be, there would be fear.
Absolutely.
Because I would know that this is a world made more brutal by the same type of people that we, whose words we put forth on this program earlier this evening.
But unfortunately, my friend, you're in the minority. And the majority seems to have a way of, like stupidity, have a habit of getting its way.
And the majority only really gets the bit in its teeth when people are silent, Jim. When people, it is an old saying, and perhaps some deem it trite, but I hold it true, that the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing.
Well, unfortunately, as history dictates, and as we read everything from Marcus Aurelius through the history of many governments that have taken power and, of course, found their way into the dustbin of history.
From Socrates to Julius Caesar to Jesus Christ to Gandhi to Dr. King. You know, when people say there's a better way, Jim, they are frequently condemned for it.
Yeah, they are. I mean, Christ was condemned for it, for what he taught, because what he taught was basically the way of the words in red, as was referenced earlier in this program, was to love your neighbor and to do what's right and to do the right thing, among other theological.
And if you'll focus on that. It's amazing how many of the other perceived problems will sort themselves out.
Well,
But you see, from that story about the 5-year-old that was really a 10-year-old earlier, the guy acknowledged to John Stewart that, yes, Christians feel persecuted in this country, but while they feel persecuted, this is the hubristic tragic irony of it, they're the ones doing the persecuting. I don't know if you followed it or not, but there's been a great big nasty uproar for the last week about Dan Savage and some remarks to some high school journalists.
Yeah, I've seen Dan Savage. I've seen him on RuPaul's Drag thing.
Okay, so are you familiar with this latest kerfuffle?
No, but I know Dan Savage well.
Okay, so he's addressing these high school journalists, and he's talking about hate. And he says, and he speaks, if you're familiar with his work, he speaks bluntly and often humorously. And Dan Savage said to this assembled group, there's a lot of BS in the Bible that we've gotten past. We got past, and he used the word bullshit. We got past the bullshit in the Bible about slavery being okay. We got past the bullshit in the Bible about not eating shrimp. We got past the bullshit in the Bible about not wearing wool and cotton blended together. Well, we can also get past the bullshit in the Bible about homosexuality being evil.
And at this point in time, a whole bunch of little fundy kids got up and walked out. And later on, he said, you can tell those little pansy asses out there that we're done talking about the Bible and they can come back in. And now, of course, Dan Savage is persecuting the Christians. Well, Dan Savage wouldn't have a damn word to say, Jim, if it weren't for the fact that the right wing is out there doing that and far worse every minute of every day. And so what he did is he pushed back a little bit, but they really are. They can dish it out. They're bullies. They can, you know, the best way to stop bullying, and I hate to say this as a person who espouses nonviolence, is to put one's face through the nose of the bully, and then the bully stops being a bully, and that's what Dan Savage did.
Right. You're telling me this? I know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, on this program, I have never, ever attempted to disclose anything about my life, period. You know that, and...
Well, come on, Jim. You've told some damn fine stories, okay? I mean, you have.
Well, of course, I guess I have. And, you know, I thought them humorous, and if I didn't think them humorous, I wouldn't have shared them with you.
And they were.
And, you know, I tried to... I guess, in the midst of a lot of conflict, maintain element of symmetry, which is sense of humor, and also my sense of history. And that's the reason I've constantly gone back on this program to things like the regimes of Hitler and Joseph Stalin.
Perspective, you know, you noted, you know, the that America is more polarized now than it ever has been in all your life. And I don't differ with you
on this. We are almost... stage right now of where Weimar Germany was in 1919. Coming to that.
I do not disagree.
And what I fear the most, and the reason I've been called a Nazi because I talk about these things, not because I'm a believer in what Adolf Hitler did. I mean, you know, I find him interesting. I find the period interesting. And I find it frightening. And I find it a lot of history that we are learning very well. I mean, you know, you have these people who stage these magnificent spectacles and this, that, and the other, and who posture and this, that, and the other, who fret and force their way about the stage. And they have a way of taking a decent and honorable piece of humanity, the way Germany and other nations have been taken, into the absolute depths of destruction. And I really see with the economic conditions and even the racial divide in this country, I don't think that there's a great deal more tolerance racially than there was back in the 60s. I think it's still very much alive. Intolerance is.
I think the intolerance is very much alive, but by the same token, I think that it is becoming a more barbarous howl, because those are the... I prefer to be a little bit optimistic, sort of like Brother Albert on this. I think those howls are the last... Death squeals of a generation passing away.
I hope you're right. Like I told you before, Khrushchev once said, there are only certain mistakes that are corrected, and that's by the grave.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I've also stated this for the record, that I've also been a desolationist, too.
And you know what? Sometimes it's hard to avoid that.
Well, you're 47.
Nine.
47, 48, 49. I mean, you know, hey, what's 2 years among people who go back as long as we do?
Yeah. Who's counting?
Right, who's counting? And, you know, it just seems like stupidity has a habit of getting its way. And that's just been the cyclical, historical element.
But to a certain extent, Jim, I think we are... Our point of view is to a certain extent shaded by our place in both time and space. I read an article the other day that News Ninja Gene sent me. It was someone commenting about the way religion finds its way into our political debates, and it pointed out that in most of the rest of the so-called civilized world, the way that presidential campaigns and generally politics are conducted in this country might as well be coming from another planet.
Yeah, really. I mean, they're going to the point that, you know, it's not a matter of...
And so, it, you know, it's our place. You know, we look down our noses at Iran and call it a theocracy. But, how much business do we have doing that when it is impossible? It would be physically impossible for a person to run for president and not periodically bow and scrape and bend a knee of fealty to some sort of divine.
Well, the thing about it is, and Mr. Ahmadinejad has come out openly saying there was no such thing as the Holocaust, and it was all contrived and made up.
Yeah, he's a loon.
And, of course, that loon is the president of Iran, and that loon has the power of life and death over a very large nation among a very large number of people.
But a group of imams has the power of life and death over him. His powers are greatly diminished as a result of the last election.
Well, you know how it is among the clerics when they come into politics, how they will definitely defer to the secular in order not to be hauled out in the middle of the night at 4 o'clock. Into, well, I guess their version of the Lubyanka or the Lefortovo prisons of Moscow, Stalin's Russia. And that's precisely what Ahmadinejad represents to me. Now, it might not represent that to you, but that's what he represents to me.
It's actually upside down because the last elections in Iran were a great big affirmation of the clerics. They have the power now. Most any Iran expert would tell you, they have the power now to have Ahmadinejad dragged out in the middle of the night and taken out in the desert and dealt with. And he knows it.
Well, apparently he must have their acquiescence in what he's saying, or he wouldn't be saying it. That is in fact true. So I mean, you know, QED. But nonetheless. There it is, and there you have it. And
well, you did mention, Jim, and I just have to share this with you because it happens here in our home state. I guess it was last week that we had the story of John Racy saying that not being able to smoke in his buildings in Morgantown was just like having to wear a yellow Star of David sewn on his clothing. I don't know if you saw that or not, but yeah, he did.
Oh, we talked about that, and I told you the man was an absolute idiot.
Right. Well, yeah. He's doubled down. I've got the story here somewhere, but Fritz sent it to me. And you know, the mark of an enlightened person is that having made one mistake. Try not to repeat the same, right?
Agreed.
Well, sent me this story. To be fair, Fritz had sent me the same story we had the previous week. It wasn't the same story, Jim. He did it again. I tweeted it or whatever. And the fact of the matter is, Joe Manchin is never going to impress anybody with his big brain.
Agree.
And if he had an opponent with an IQ the temperature of water left outside on a winter's day, he would be dead in the water. But no, it turns out the story that Fritz sent me was not the same story you and I discussed. Apparently, John, and the sad thing is, and this goes back to what you said about stupid getting its way.
Yes.
Well, John Racy is trailing like 72-22% in polls against Joe Manchin. And there's a reason he's talking about all of this stuff. And it's because he hopes to bring out an electorate in this state that is unavoidably, undeniably racist and has more than a little stripe, a little pinstripe of fascism to it. He was talking at an event on this past Saturday about President Obama, and you know there's been a few things here and there about child labor bills where various and sundry right-wing legislatures in this country want to overturn the child labor laws.
I've heard about this, yes, about children working on farms and things like that.
Yeah, and he said, Barack wants to stop all children from working on the farm. Can you imagine this? I can't fathom that. Did you ever think we'd grow up in an America to see something like that? Let me take it one step further. He wants to disallow the 4-H from training children to work on a farm. Yavol.
That's what I'm saying. You know, politics in this country now used to be a reasonably, how can I say this delicately and with accuracy? Well, I will say this. It did not used to be the blood sport that it has become now. And when any type of contest becomes a blood sport, it's generally the bully who wins. And these people will do anything they possibly can, bring any particular issue to light and, you know, pervert it in their own way. I mean, John Racy compared his not being able to blaze up to being taken into Auschwitz-Birkenau. That's exactly what he did, which is absolutely fatuous and, you know, absolutely...
Well, it's hateful.
Well, it's not only hateful, it's just stupid. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You know, you have this country being occupied by stories like that, political stories like that, and the president being the man who can't do anything right, basically because in their heart of hearts, they don't like the guy because he's not white. And you have so many other prejudices that are being brought to play or into play that, well, in my humble opinion, and I hope I'm definitely wrong, and I hope you are right, but I have my reservations from what I've been through.
And I don't think you are wrong to have those reservations. But
no, because of living, Bob, I know what it's like.
If you poll teenagers and 20-somethings, the results you get are wildly different on issues related to both homosexuality and race than they are if you poll the 60-somethings.
I do hope that there is a measurable outcome in a positive way. But it would appear to me as though a lot of these right-wing people, these fascists and people who do not have the best interest of humanity at heart, that they're trying to push back to the point that they can erase any measurable gains that have been made. They don't like those gains. They don't like the idea of...
No, they want to stand in the surf and tell the tide not to come in, Jim.
Yeah, they're standing their ground, and what they're trying to do is not only stand their ground, they're trying to take whatever ground that has been gained, whatever territories have been conquered in the name of tolerance and willing to live and let live. That's what, in my opinion, they're trying to do. And they're very subtle in their ways that they do it, and some people aren't as subtle. But they have a lot of money and a lot of power behind them. And it's very frightening. And they have begun to really, in my opinion, erode whatever progress that may have been made in the past 40 years. And we talked about this before, too. Every element from racial toleration to entitlement programs to health care to everything that's been achieved that's been good and shiny. They are in their own way trying to take it back for themselves. And I don't know what they're going to do with it when they get it.
Well, Ben, I mean, if that ever came true, Jim, what you would then see would be religious wars in this country, a bloodletting. Because then they would have to get down to the dirty business of fighting over whose version of salvation was the correct one. And you see, that's the reason that the people who prevailed upon the Constitutional Convention to agree to pass the Bill of Rights subject to the Constitution being ratified, that's part of the reason they did it, was because they, you know, there was a history that was as not as far back as the Civil War is to us, of countries rending themselves in twain.
I know. I mean, Bob, look at the French Revolution when it first started, and look at what happened to Robespierre. At first, he was against the death penalty. He was a proponent of the Declaration of the Rights of Man. And look what Robespierre became.
Yeah. These were largely English-based colonies, and they didn't have to look outside the shores of the Sceptred Isle to see what happens when you have internecine strife over whether or not transubstantiation obtains or consubstantiation. People were slaughtered in their thousands over that.
I know.
And so consequently, they established a separation whereby the government would not be an endorser of religion. But, you know, this people like this this jackass on John Stewart's program, he wants an America in which government endorses religion, and then they get to fight it out over which religion gets endorsed.
Did they ever decide what the young man was praying for? Was he just saying his blessing, thanking God for his food?
He wasn't praying at all. He wasn't a 5-year-old.
What was he doing?
He was a 10-year-old who was engaged in fighting in the cafeteria.
Oh, I see.
The whole thing was made up.
Contrived.
It was a lie.
Oh, there it is. Well, you know how it is, and I'll get off here after repeating what I've said about Dr. Goebbels and the big lie. And, you know, that's the thing. You don't tell little lies. You tell those big ones.
Right, and this is a classic case in point of how right-wing lies get spread. It starts out before 2009 in a book by David Limbaugh. It gets picked up by Ann Coulter, and 3 years later, it's being repeated as gospel truth on The Daily Show to Jon Stewart.
Well, it doesn't bode well, does it?
It has to be fought back against. It has. There is a struggle, and there are no neutrals in this struggle. Jim, have a good evening, my friend.
Likewise.
Take care. Bye now. Our good friend Jim. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program. Okay. Are you there? Hello. Yeah, that was definitely the sound of the connection. Maybe somebody went for a sandwich. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, welcome to the program. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
It's Vince.
Oh, hey, Vince. How are you? I got a little echo coming back at me.
Yeah, it's my phone. It's I'm still working on it.
Okay, no worries.
Is it too bad?
No. We'll get by.
All right. So, how you been, dude?
I've been well. How about you? Well, no, not really. I've got a little Republican living in my gut, but apart from that, I'm okay. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Can we just, like, get Godwin's Law and apply it to, like, everything? It works well enough for internet discussions, but every time one of these idiots runs around and starts screaming about how, oh, my God, I can't smoke, it's like I'm being persecuted by Nazis, I just want to go, congratulations, you lost the argument automatically.
See, but yeah, that would mean having to explain Godwin's Law to John Racy, and that's like explaining nuclear physics to
a 4-year-old?
To a Cro-Magnon 4-year-old. I will now get letters in defense of Cro-Magnon man.
And I'm sure you will. it was interesting a couple of weeks back. Just to kind of give you an update, I'm up in Detroit, Michigan now, and guess who was right up the street from me not too long ago causing a ruckus again?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm next door to Dearborn.
Yeah, so that was it, the Burn the Koran guy?
Yeah, Kerry Jones, and according to him, I'm now living under Sharia law.
Well, that sucks. I mean, have you been able to get any? I mean, I assume you can still buy hot dogs that have pork in them, right, Vince? I mean, or maybe, I mean, maybe not.
I didn't know, but apparently I'm pressed and just didn't know it.
Dadgummit. Does that mean that, does that, well, how's your lovely spouse feel about you taking on those extra wives?
Well, we hadn't gotten around to that yet, actually.
Yeah, you know what? I'd hold off on that conversation till the Sharia law gets a little more roots under it.
But in all seriousness, you know, it's a city just like anything else. People just dress a little funnier. But come on, I work in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, what's funny?
I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot more elegance in a robe than in a pair of skanky sweatpants and a T-shirt that says "Fear This."
And never mind that those pants are down to their ankles, and you know they've got their boxers up to their arms.
No. I'm speaking in, well, I'm talking about what you see when you wander into the local Wally World around here.
Well, yeah,
like the Friends of Coal lady who got out of her poorly parked automobile. Yeah. It's not like they get dressed up to go to Walmart.
I don't know. I don't know if we're going to the website peopleofwalmart.com. There's some scary things there.
Oh, I go to peopleofwalmart.com about once a week.
I try to avoid it just because my wife used to work there, and she was very much not amused.
Oh, I'll bet. Well, yeah, I can more than understand that. But you know, you're in Dearborn, so you know that's where Pam Geller had her Women of Islam conference that Women of Islam weren't allowed to attend. Yeah, piece of work, her.
They're all a piece of work. Gangrene finally hung up his campaign about 6 months too late.
Yeah, with a big thank you to Sheldon Adelson for, you know, for a casino mogul, that wasn't a good bet.
Nah. And it never looked like one. Who did he think he was kidding me? Did anybody really think he had a shot at this?
I don't know. Maybe it's part of a, maybe he's paying off the Tiffany's bill or something.
I don't know. I just love, though, how it's perfectly okay for him to go however millions of dollars in debt he is right now. But, oh, my God, somebody doesn't pay their bills, and, well, they ought to just go to a debtor's center or have their kids work the debt off being a janitor for a school or whatever the heck his bread is.
Because, that's the right-wing definition of freedom, like Albert and I were talking about. I can go on having a god-awful pain in my gut. Or I can find $15,000 laying around somewhere and make the pain go away. And that's I've got the freedom somewhere to make that choice.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like how, you know, I'm stuck in a dead-end job right now that, you know, if I'm lucky, I might be able to get promoted into something, but the reason I keep getting passed over is because I don't have the diploma that says I know what I know. Now, I could go ahead and I could drop, I don't know, what's the going rate for a year of tuition right now? About $24,000 if you go to a community college? To do that.
Yeah, you're free enough to make that choice. But you're equally free enough to continue working the dead-end job and be glad you've got one, American citizen. Yeah, you know, the funny thing is it doesn't feel that free. It's kind of like an email I got from our buddy Robert in Australia. He said, after the Port Arthur massacre in 1996 with 35 people killed and 21 wounded in Tasmania, the federal government did what governments should do and changed the gun ownership laws in Australia. And basically, you can't possess semi-automatic and pump-action shotguns, and they restricted the system of licensing and ownership, they came up with a whole process whereby guns were bought back and so forth. And with all of that having been done, Robert closes his email by saying, I still feel free and a lot safer.
Mm. I would just be happy if we could, you know, join the rest of the civilized nation and, you know, not have to worry about, you know, your gut all of a sudden deciding to go AWOL on you or my knees blowing up on me or attack or God knows what else. I mean...
But see, the heroes of the right wing are willing to sacrifice their own freedom. That's why that incredibly brave and heroic daughter of Scott Brown, who as a result of the Affordable Care Act is being allowed to stay on her daddy's insurance, well, she's sacrificing her freedom for us.
Yeah. Oh,
because that's what the 1% does. They sacrifice their freedom. We just don't understand. We're a bunch of ingrates, us 99%er trolls. Yeah.
Let's just call it for what it is. It's just modern-day serfdom. That's all it is.
Surfs up.
Yeah.
Well, it's awful good to hear from you, Vince. Hopefully we will...
You got other blinkies?
Well, not other blinkies. I'm out of time.
Oh, you're completely out of time. My clocks must be behind. Well, I've got good internet now, and I've actually got myself into a place, so you'll be hearing from me more. Take it easy, man.
Well, I sure hope we will. Don't be such a stranger, Vince.
I try not to, but this is the first good internet I've had in close to 2 years. So.
Oh, I understand. Well, we actually think about you when folks disappear, so you've stayed in our thoughts.
Well, I just wanted to check in and say I'm alive and well, and... like I said, the Sharia law thing, apparently, I don't know what that's all about, but whatever.
Well, you know, you're there in the front line, so I'm sure you'll tell us the first time it gets tacked on your door or something. Take care, Vince.
Oh yeah. When the invasion starts, I'll let you all know.
Yeah, do please.
See you later, Bob.
All right, later, Vince. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Just another free American. That's our buddy Vince, and good to hear from him after a long time away. It is a couple of minutes before the hour. It's time to get out of here. And I thank you all. I thank you for the kind contributions that came in. We got within $10. We got within $10 of meeting tonight's fundraising goal, and that's pretty impressive. Thank you very, very much. And thanks to all of you who contribute your time, your energy, your thoughts, your emails, your phone calls, your participation in the chat room. Thank you. Your finite time is the most precious thing that you can share. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo, is on assignment below the possum line and behind the cornbread curtain. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox for all that he does. Every last thing, from the website to the technical advice, and occasionally getting behind the microphone and serving as a darn fine host in his own right. Thank you, John. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything you hear is a function of the ongoing hard work. 10 years now that the White Rose Society, WhiteRoseSociety.org, has been making sure that progressive, liberal, sane radio is available on the internet. There's a level of heroism there that most folks don't understand. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, stoptheache.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch.